Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Welcome to Weekend Confirmed, everybody. My name is Garnet Lee, and this is the, it's not the pre-pack show, because we're still going to do...
The pre-pack show,
but getting ready for a big pack show. We got lots of folks lined up for that show. I think you're going to have a fantastic time. Today, though, it's just the three of us. It's like an intimate setting.
Just the three of us.
You're not going to go with Power Trio?
Power Trio. Well, we were doing Canadian comedy right here beforehand.
If you're not watching
the pre-show video, you should be. We've got it both on our Facebook page. It's embedded in the shacknews.com story, which you should always be reading anyway, because that's where the comments are. And it's on YouTube, so you could share it with your friends and have everybody poke fun of how silly we are. And we're joined today by Mr. Jeff Deep Thoughts Kanata.
I'm a fan, yes. Of course, that's with two N's and one T, as we all know.
Yes.
How's it going?
It's going great. It's going great. It's going fantastic. Actually, you know how it's going.
I do.
Girlfriend was here over the weekend and she had to leave, and so...
So it was going real great, and now it's going less great.
Yeah.
That's all right.
C'est la vie. Such is the pattern of life. See you again soon. And Zav D'Amatos at the other end of the table.
Gentlemen, always a pleasure. How are you?
He's looking very officious today. He has the pencil in his hand. He's drawing
a
maple leaf.
I'm thinking about hockey. You know what? Keep drinking, ladies and gentlemen, because I'm going to be talking about hockey a lot today.
He's drawing a freaking maple leaf.
I did.
That's pretty hilarious. Hey, so we were talking about, what's coming up on the show today? We're talking about what games we can talk about. One of them that I know you're all dying to hear about, unfortunately, is heavily embargoed. That would be Deus Ex Human Revolution. Although there was preview code out that covered the first 10 hours, we're going to maybe skip around that because we're concerned that the powers that be might be very frustrated and upset.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's what Zav and I have been playing a lot of already this week, but we're not allowed to talk about it.
Anyway. However, we will talk about it a lot next week.
Indeed.
Yes, obviously. Zav's playing the PC version. Mr. Kanata's playing the 360 version. I have a copy of the 360 version, so we'll all have been playing the game.
And that's only because that's what they sent me.
Right, it's weird that they didn't send out PS3, because I thought for a long while that it seemed like that was sort of their lead.
No, I've heard that before, but it's not. I remember interviewing, I think it's Jean-Sebastien Dugas is the director of the game, and
to say Jean-Sebastien Dugas.
Okay. We'll drop that in later. Just edit that out, Brooklyn. He told me that they're developing that stuff at the same time, so there is no lead platform. The only difference is the PC version is developed by a completely different studio.
But they're just working on the code base or
they're
whatever.
They're just working on the code base.
The one problem with the 360 version is it on 27 discs?
How what? Much?
No, is it's that? On one disc.
Is it on one disc?
Yeah.
For some reason, I thought it was on more.
It's on one.
You guys think Deep Thoughts is funny, and then I do a straight line like that, and you're like,
I'm sorry. Was that a joke?
I didn't. I wasn't following.
It was more trolling, I guess.
Oh, okay.
So we have some sports games.
I do like the fact that you can save anywhere, like on a PC game.
Super quick.
That too. Is. Yes.
And saving is super quick.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll not talk about that anymore.
That's cool. Anyway, so we got Deus Ex coming up next week, and I'm sure we'll have a lot to say about that.
Yes.
I'm really curious, as a huge fan of the first game, but then was not able to get pulled into Invisible War.
I didn't even play Invisible War. As a huge fan of the first game.
That's probably a good idea. Yeah. I'm really curious to see how I like this one. You know, one of the catches to this that I'm really interested because I played the preview build a little bit, and I struggled because the preview build that we got, the second one, I guess, was had a lot of advanced... You were supposed to know how to play the game, basically, or have learned how to play the game by playing into it.
Okay.
I guess it was so much maybe you handed me a save because I remember I started.
Possible.
I picked up playing it and I was in a factory complex and there was all kinds of stuff going on. There were sentry robots and dudes on patrol and
that's the
stuff
beginning
to hack,
of the game.
And I didn't have any idea how to deal with any of it yet. And I guess because I hadn't played enough.
Yeah.
And one of the things immediately came to mind is I'm curious how much differentiation there'll be in this game because the difference is that this is earlier than Deus Ex. Mm-hmm. And instead of cybernetic implants, you get more biomechanical style implants, according to the lore. So, mm-hmm. And you start off already fairly pumped up because...
Well,
I mean, everyone knows the catch to the story. I mean, they've made that clear in the trailer. The catch to the story is that you play this character who is working for a security force and gets injured, and then he gets augmented and you get cast into this conspiracy stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm interested to see how
you
that
are falls. Correct. I'm afraid to say things because of anger.
God.
Yeah.
Blink twice.
And I thought your girlfriend was the only one who had a hold of your balls.
Whoa. She's here, dude.
Not she probably cool. thought that was funny. No, she's laughing.
Honey, could you please just let go of my balls for a second? I have to do
laughing.
A show.
Well, she's here because they're in her purse.
Oh. Wow. He doesn't want to get too separated from them.
I'm just, you know.
I don't like this kind of humor. Yeah,
guy.
Where's the pig?
Oh, no, I
where's
get it.
The pig to put the money in?
So that's why you haven't had to be shaving so much lately.
All right, now this
what?
Just needs to.
What are you even saying? All right. We also have NHL perfect. To talk about.
Yes, I would like to move on very quickly to something like an NHL. You guys have been playing El Shaddai, which we had Shane Bettenhausen on last week.
Yeah. I forgot.
UTV Ignition.
If we get into sports, I've been playing Madden, so maybe we can always talk about Madden.
Okay.
I can always talk about Madden, but it kind of bores people. Oh, you know what? That reminds me. Someone asked me a question.
Speaking of boring people.
No, I was Sorry. Going to ask a question to see if we would be boring people.
Uh-huh.
Number one, we got to bring back the tailgate.
Absolutely.
So we have to make plans to bring out the tailgate.
Yeah.
So then
dude,
tonight,
yeah. I mean, after the show, the Steelers are playing the Eagles.
The
preseason.
Eagles?
The Eagles.
So my thought, though, and actually my thought, not my thought, one of our listeners asked if we would do, during the preseason, maybe a little fantasy get started tailgate.
Oh, boy.
I'm not sure how much people would be interested in that. I mean, I'm a huge fantasy nerd. I have like four teams now.
My answer is none, but that's up to me.
Look, Canadian.
That's my thing.
But do they even do fantasy hockey?
Yeah, they do. There's fantasy hockey.
Gotta be. There's nerds in hockey, just like there's nerds everywhere else.
Del Rio just dropped it. He said, is that where you fantasize that it doesn't exist? No, that's where you live in the southwestern United States and it disappears from your arena.
Yeah.
Sorry,
Georgia.
Yeah, so El Shaddai, I played also Toy Soldiers Cold War. And then we're going to talk a little bit about some co-op gaming, because I finished, we talked about this, I was going to talk about last week, so maybe we'll get to it this week, finishing up Portal co-op. Because there's new DLC coming, too.
Yeah.
When is that? It's coming in
September.
Is that in our news?
There's also new DLC for the Magic the Gathering game, guys. Aren't you excited? I am.
I'm excited.
This show is already off to a rocky
start. Super excited.
So that's all we got. Dude, we do have news coming up later, though. We have Mr. D'Amato's with Newsy News.
Mm-hmm.
Anything interesting in Newsy News?
Price drops galore. A lot of Vita games got shown off at Gamescom. What is that? Exit Room?
Yeah. No, Exit Strategy?
Exit Sign?
Yeah, I have it here. Somewhere.
Exit
Escape?
Escape Plan. Looks super awesome.
You guys are on top of your shit. It's awesome.
I got notes. Yeah. It's bolded and everything, motherfucker.
The game looks really cool. Did you see the trailer for that?
I did. I'm just giving you help.
Yeah. And that new NCSoft.
I think
MMO.
You can put almost anything in like black and white shadow style and be like, oh shit, did you
but
see that?
It looks actually pretty fun and clever and cool.
Dude.
I also like black and white.
It's all serious. It's all black and white. Some
I would have thought that you had affinity for black and white since you were around in that era of television.
Oh,
It was tough leaving the radio serials behind. We used to gather around the glow of the old Motorola, now owned by Google.
Yeah.
And we'd wait patiently.
Yeah, no one wants to hang out at Google anymore.
They're like, what, are you going to give me a razor? Fuck that. And then we're going to do the warning. What do we have in the warning? We have stuff from you guys to talk about, including the CNN story about finishing games, a little bit on HD collections. Oh, I have this question from Lorem Fall from a couple of weeks ago that I think is really good about MMOs. I think I'd really like because cool. I'm curious whether Mr. Kanata will ever get pulled back into MMO gaming.
Yeah. There's a little game called Star Wars coming out that I'm pretty sure I'll be playing.
Well, wait till it sucks and you'll be like, oh, this is terrible. I don't want to play anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm also excited about Terra and the Secret World that was getting shown off. There's some cool...
I still can't believe Terra's not out yet.
I know.
That game
not only not out, but it's not coming out until 2012.
Yeah.
Spring, yeah, actually, I sent a note to the one of their publishing reps about that. I said, how can this game not be coming out until 2012?
At this point, I think that team's hoping the world ends in December, so they don't have to finish it and release it.
I mean, since we're talking about Terra a little bit, if you haven't seen Terra before, it is a MMO that's being brought over from Korea. Mm-hmm. It's two things that are unique about it. Number one, it's intended to be played with a controller as an action RPG. So mm-hmm. it has a sort of PSO feel to it. And like, I think I was playing this thing at like GDC a year ago.
Yeah.
And it was already fun. Yeah. I mean, the action was there. The closing and combat and lock-on and combo system and magic and support, all that, all the things that make a good MMO and good character action game was there.
Sounds and like a DCUO.
It does probably have a lot to DC share with that. Yeah.
Sounds like that.
And I think where they've gotten bogged down is that one of the things that they flagged as a weakness in other Korean MMOs that have come over to America was...
that they're not in English.
Well, and that the localization of those games was based on, well, let's just translate the story and throw it at people.
Right, right.
And that still, you know, even translated, it just didn't work. So they've gone into this and, you know, they hired script writers.
That's good.
And character writers, and they've gone through and basically taken the core framework of game and quests and written entirely new world around it.
Yeah.
All suited to a more Western focused sort of audience. But it's taken them a long time.
You know, yeah. Good localization goes a long way. I mean, those guys, the guys at 8-4, like Mark McDonald and John Riccardi, is it?
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, they, with Shadows of the Damned especially, they were kind of given free reign to do whatever. You know what I mean? And that, it makes a big, big difference.
Absolutely.
This isn't the 90s anymore where you can get away with shit like all your bases.
Well, should that transition us into El Shaddai?
We could transition into El Shaddai.
I found... you know, it's tough. Shane comes in here and describes the game, and I was pumped. I'm really glad. He hand-delivered us copies. I played it on the PS3. Was really excited to play it, and like the game a lot in a lot of ways. But when he was describing the story of the game,
right,
and how it's based on the Dead Sea Scrolls and Judeo-Christian sort of...
apocryphy.
You know, these stories that really you've never seen a game based on before, which is really exciting, and because it's so original and different... But boy, if he hadn't have made that description to me, I wouldn't have gotten that from the game.
You wouldn't have?
Not really. I mean, maybe I'm just not up on my biblical apocrypha, but...
Lucifer, Ezekiel, like...
No, I get the references.
They even tell you the archangels, the beautiful swans.
Right. I get the references. I just... The story felt so obtuse and difficult to get into for me and sort of abstract and just... I don't know, maybe too out there, too avant-garde for me, which is odd because the source material is anything but I don't know. For me, the story was the big speed bump. It was the big pull initially of me like, oh, I'm so excited, but it was the speed bump of enjoyment, whereas the fighting system, the weapons, the design was the most enjoyable part of the game. I really had a good time.
I'm curious because I've played... I played a couple of hours, I would say. I'm trying to think. I got well past it. It's pretty cool because you play in the... Actually, so I'll tell you one thing, and how much have you played?
A pretty good amount.
Okay, because one thing that we noticed when we started playing this game is that it has a very abrupt, uneven entry into the game.
You know, yeah.
In a time when we've gotten accustomed to turning on a game and being really...
Handheld?
Yeah. See, now, I would say that handheld has a connotation of being negative, right? Like, oh, you're holding my hand. And I would say that that games that feel too much like they're holding your hands aren't doing it right. The games that we like, though, bring us into their world and capture us, and we, you know...
Sure.
And before we know it, we're playing the games, and we're 2 and 3 hours into it,
sure,
and we're like, wow, that's really working.
We meet Alice before she goes down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I'm not talking about Alice the game. I'm talking about, you know, metaphorically speaking. We need to know Alice exists in the real world before things get so bizarre that we don't have any reference point.
And this does a couple of times, and even just in the first 30 minutes, it does that weird thing of you're in control of the player, but you don't really know your controls yet, and then you come to something where... as part of the plot, you're supposed to get your ass kicked.
That is never a good idea.
And you don't really know you're supposed to get your ass kicked. So at first you're just like, well, I'm just getting wailed on. Like, what's going on? And then you die. And then like some more stuff happens and some screens go by. And then you realize, as part of the plot progression.
And that happens several times where you are supposed to get your ass kicked and you don't realize it. And it just feels crappy. And you're like, oh my God, that boss just... worked me.
Yeah.
I'm dead. Oh, I was supposed to die
Is there no way for you to win that? Because I remember Symphony of the Night did that in the beginning, and you could be Dracula or you could not. I mean,
I wondered that myself. I was like, was this a really interesting branching point where it just branches off into, well, I lost? But it literally, I didn't even land a blow on the guy.
Oh, I think the idea is interesting. I think the idea of pulling you in by hurting you like that is,
I don't know.
I think the idea is cool. I just think it's tough to execute on. And in combination with the way the game gets started, where you just have such a dearth of information and you're not really sure exactly what's happening, and it doesn't come together until after the title screens and the credits, which is like 45 minutes into the game.
Yeah.
And then you finally get a little bit of like a little trickle, and it's like, okay.
Yeah.
You start to understand a little bit what's happening. That is just, I sort of guess that they were going for that, you know, like coolness through obfuscation or whatever, but
yeah.
it's too much.
I think so. And you're always running into Lucifer, and he's always saying things like, well, he just doesn't get it. No, he's doing better, but boy, he sucked. You know, it's like,
which is cool. It's a thematic thing. It is sort of, it's cool. I mean, you get that. Okay. It's by intent. I'm just not sure that it's working quite as well as it was imagined to work.
Yeah.
That having been said, the story is sort of, I mean, I get it. I wasn't having as much trouble with it, I guess. I mean, I see where, like, it's pretty clear up at, I mean, once you get to that point, they're pretty upfront about, hey, you got to go down to Earth and save these angels. If you don't save angels, humanity's screwed.
Right.
Go get them. Go get them, Tiger.
I get the overarching, you know, structure of it, but I don't, moment to moment, who that dude is as in relation to who this dude is and why he's saying that particular thing to me in this particular time. Mm-hmm. It's all a little nebulous and unclear.
When games do that to you, I'm interested to find out whether or not you feel it difficult for you to be sort of pulled into caring about those situations. Like, do you care now the next moment where you have to make this, you have to battle because you understand what's happening in the storyline? Does it affect?
I would say that's an accurate statement. Mm-hmm. I had so much fun with the fighting system and attacks.
Yeah.
In the combat system, and the design, the look of the game, which somehow they managed to make the game look completely unlike any other game out there.
It looks like watercolors, right?
Well, sometimes, and other times it looks like bizarre, like ultra neon, crazy Tron world.
I've only seen it at press events. I've never actually seen the game. I know that each section of it is very different in terms of
very different
who you're going up against, right?
Yeah, each level of the game looks completely unlike the level preceding it, and also completely unlike any other level you've played in a video game. Oh. You know, and I think that's an achievement right there. And I love the character designs.
Great use
too.
Of color.
Yes.
Great use of
filters and
of
weird
various
stuff.
Intensities of light on the screen. You know, remember when we first saw HDR lighting and it was sort of like a novelty?
Yeah.
Here, one of the things that I think that stands out is that across the screen at any given time, you get all of these different intensities of light and different sort of reflective surfaces combined with colors, combined with filters, and it very much gives you this surreal dreamscape effect that does change.
Yeah, and then you get to this like whimsical, the 2D levels can be so almost like a Kirby game, you know, so stark and hard line animation looking, very much like a 2D cell animated kids game almost. You're jumping on balloons and you're, you know, these little weird creatures pop up.
I love the environment art and I love the character art. I'm not as sure about the enemies.
Really? I thought they were pretty neat.
Yeah.
The way that the design of them and especially the weapon designs are really cool.
The weapon
cool
is
too.
Like the arc blade thing is pretty cool. I won't
forget
that.
And the ranged weapon, did you get the ranged weapon and then the shield thing that splits in half? And you have sort of are wearing each half of the shield on each arm.
Oh.
And it works like almost like Link's big gloves, big punching metal gloves.
Okay.
It's pretty spiff.
It's cool, but then when you block, you can hold them together, and it creates a full circular shield. And the only way to get, well, not the only way, but the most common way to get a new weapon is you have to steal it from an enemy.
Right.
So you can't just select which weapon you want at any given time. You have to actually take it from some guy and purify it. And then periodically you'll have to purify it as well.
Does that stay with you, or do you have to continuously do that every level?
You'll keep that weapon until you steal another one. But,
that's cool.
But you'll often need to steal a weapon in order to, A, beat that enemy, because that's the quickest way to beat them, because it disarms them.
Right.
And B, there's this cool kind of rock, paper, scissors element to the different weapons where it's like, well, ranged works really well against that kind of guy, so I'm going to go kill the ranged guy and steal his weapon first, and then use that ranged weapon on this other enemy that it tends to work best, and then right. take his weapon and, you know, so you're always kind of being switching up what weapon you're using based on who you're attacking next.
So based on what I saw in the press events, it seems like the levels are sort of broken into this 2D platform, and then it goes into 3D space where you battle. Is that how each mission is sort of laid out, or is there
no?
Stuff
it's
between
much
that?
More. It's much more haphazard as far as when you're in a 2D and when you're in a 3. I feel 3D is the majority of the game.
Okay.
But then you do these. There's sometimes a 2D level will just be a loading screen, and you'll hear a voiceover. Not, oh. I mean, maybe it's not a loading screen, but it's just a bridge to from one act to another, and you'll hear a voiceover explaining stuff to you. Or and then there's much more intricate platforming elements
okay.
in the 2D, but sometimes it'll happen, you know, in the middle of a level. Sometimes it'll happen at the bookend of a level. It doesn't seem to be there's a specific formula for it, but it's a cool change of pace, and I like the fact that you go back and forth.
Yeah,
and I mean, it's got that Devil May Cry, Ninja Gaiden, fun
so to wrap
juggling
it up on,
enemies.
To wrap it up on that front. The thing about El Shaddai that I think we didn't touch about the most on last time is the, you know, controller to character combat in the game.
Yeah.
It's pretty simplistic, actually, because you have a attack button, you have a jump button, and you have a block button.
Well, you have two attack buttons, don't you? I thought you had two attack
buttons. You can
button.
Modify with the bumper.
Right. But
you have X and square, and it's duplicated with circle and triangle.
Oh, okay.
But it's just duplicated.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
Because that's jump and attack. So
right.
Jump and attack. So depending on how you like to hold the controller, that's how you like to hold the controller.
Yeah. And then timing is a big thing, too.
Timing is so.
Which is really fun.
That's what I say. So the comparison and contrast here is that though it's not focused on, you know, for instance, especially Ninja Gaiden, Devil May Cry as well, learning, you know, D-pad and button press combinations, it is very much a matter of battlefield management, knowing your spacing. One thing I find that is, you know, you're oftentimes you're fighting more than one enemy at a time, and you're able to break combos into wherever you want to. And one of the things I find myself doing already is thinking, well, the third strike on this combo has a pushback effect on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go ahead and do two strikes on this guy, but then I'm going to quickly turn around and hit this guy who's closing on me and knock him back before turning back and finishing the guy who's in front of me.
Yeah.
Now that's cool. I like that. The flip side though is that you don't have camera control in this game.
Right.
And it doesn't have a lock on. So I've already run into a number of times where it was, you know, a little awkward relationally figuring out where I was in space and keeping up with the fighting when it got intense.
That's also problematic in the platforming elements in the 3D space.
I was
going to
say that too.
I was a number of times where I thought I was lined up to land on the platform.
You got
to
watch your shadow. It's another one of those games that when you're platforming in 3D, you have to just look at the ground and watch the shadow.
The good news is it's very forgiving in that way. You know, it doesn't really hurt you when you fall down, as Shane was mentioning last week, because you fall down an infinite pit. It's not instant death.
Because you can't die.
You can die.
Well, I mean, it does reset where you were or resets that level, but your character is such that he cannot die, right? That was
well,
what Shane was saying last week, right?
He can die. You can, I mean, you have to load the last checkpoint if you...
Okay, but it's technically not dying. I mean...
Yeah, yeah.
Though in the game mythology, no, you don't die. Okay. But you do at times get sent back to your last checkpoint if you don't jam the buttons or if you go off an edge or whatever and like get killed from that.
I also have a tiny little nit to pick about the jamming of the buttons thing, because it goes into this weird almost first person kind of like your eyes are closing.
Oh,
and as you jam the buttons, it doesn't slowly open that thing. It's just it's
you
a
want
binary
some Fight Night shit going on.
Well, I want to know, am I hitting the buttons fast enough for you or not? And sometimes I'm not, and there's no indication that I am or aren't until
that's
it's
weird.
It's like either pass fail rather than showing you, oh, you're getting closer, you're getting closer, oh, you're not getting...
Right, and how do you know if you're passing or failing if they're not giving you an indication on
exactly.
the screen? Okay.
Yeah.
I got you. I guess my advice would be, if you do pick up El Shaddai, number one, be ready for fast action that is a little less combo-oriented as far as learning and mastering sets and being more about paying attention to what your character is doing on the screen, which I like. That's fun.
Mm-hmm.
And stick in there through the first hour and a half, because it does definitely smooth out and become a much more enjoyable game.
Once you get all three weapons, it really
comes
in.
Yeah. And it's pretty effective about doing that. Just the first hour and a half is a little rough patch to get through. All right. Zav, how are you doing on, speaking of
Hopefully not a rough patch. How's the UFC training challenge going?
It's good. Yeah. I mean, I've been sick the last couple of days. I didn't miss a day, but because today's usually my off day, I'm going to do it today.
All right.
And it's been good. I mean, my joke last week was that, or was it last week? Yeah. That a lot of people in the industry are in great shape. Unfortunately, that shape is round. So that's why we're doing this, right? And it's fun. I mean, I was talking to someone, and I don't want to name names, but I was talking to someone who I convinced to be a part of this, and I told them I apologize because he hasn't received the game yet, and I told him after doing it for a few days, I sent him a message saying I'm sorry because you're going to hate me because it's a lot of, you know, a lot of groundwork. It's UFC. So a lot of that stuff is groundwork and a lot of cardio. One thing that it does really well is that...
What do you mean
by
groundwork?
You know, like a lot of sit-ups and push-ups and do a lot of...
you're on the ground.
Bicycle push-ups and all this other stuff, you know?
I went to SummerSlam with Don Fubar, our friend Jose Sanchez from Electric Playground.
Mm-hmm.
And he had reviewed the game and he said, I've never played a game that tried to kill me before.
It does do that.
Yeah, he said the first thing you do is this assessment. And in the assessment, he's like, I think I might die. He said that he makes you check your pulse.
Yeah.
And his pulse
was higher than what it allows you to do it. Yeah. So when you do the fitness test for it, you have to enter your height, your weight, and then you have to do this fitness test. And at the end of the fitness test, it says, count how many beats your pulse is and input it into the system. And it maxes out at like, I think 130 or something.
Yeah.
Or no, it maxes at like 30 because you count for 15 seconds. And like mine was like 32 or 33. Yeah. And it wouldn't let me go over 30. Like,
it's a bad sign.
It's
man.
A bad sign. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Gabe's like, yeah, no one's ever going to be higher than this.
Exactly.
Don't
right.
Worry.
So
30 for 15 seconds?
I don't remember exactly.
So like, it's got to be higher than that because it'd only be 120.
I don't know. I honestly, I don't know. I'm not reviewing it. I'm just checking it out. But the thing that I like about it is that it mixes it up. Like the first couple of days you do a lot of cardio and then you end up doing a lot of, you know, like leg work and all this other stuff. The one thing that I don't like about it, because we are playing on Kinect, is that the Kinect sensor is really finicky about when you start moving around, and especially when you're low. So positioning is a problem with the Kinect sensor, and also the spacing, obviously, with Kinect and that Nyko thing, I can't come out soon enough for some of the people doing this because they're having a lot of problems with it.
Microsoft says you don't need
up
it.
On you. Well, they're wrong. I mean, Microsoft says that, but then when they demo it and they're like, here, come to this gymnasium where we've set up Kinect and you have all the room in the world, it's kind of a pain in the ass. But I'm enjoying it. I missed a day, but I'm going to do it today. It's fun.
It's cool. Anytime I think you have a workout tool that gives you the program ability of a computer to follow a regimen that makes it easy to keep up with and gives you good reward incentive, you know, that's really awesome because you see that right away.
The thing that I do, Don Fubar was saying, was that it does try to kill you, but also like physically, but on an emotional level too, because the UFC...
Oh, that's good. At least it's rounded.
Exactly.
Well-rounded.
Because if you fail something, it just berates you for not being able to do it. Oh, yeah.
That's pretty
hardcore.
It's
pretty brutal.
Then.
Yeah, it basically tells you that.
Well, maybe you should have tried the My Little Pony workout.
You know, really, like, how serious? I mean, it doesn't say, come on, you can do it.
No. I mean, for a lot of the stuff, if you get to the default, like, you have to do 10 reps. If you get to 10 reps and there's time left, it'll say, let's see how many more you can do. And you keep doing that. But sometimes you'll get to 10 and you're like, thank God I got to 10. And it's like, let's see how many more you can do. I'm like, go fuck yourself.
Pro
I'm
tip,
done.
Use all the time allotted.
Exactly. No, because if you wait until the last second, it's also like, let's see if you can do a couple more. And I'm like, no, you know, I think I'm good on that front.
See if you can shut the hell up.
Yeah, it's not cool about if you fail, it just yells at you. So it's
that's kind of funny. It's a video game that yells at you as your personal trainer. That's kind of awesome. All right, well, we won't yell at you as long as you stick around, because when we come back on the other side, we still have games to talk about. Coming up in the music segment, we have Mr. Perkins' Pop Life featuring Aaron G. West. You're not going to miss that either, so stick around. Weekend Confirmed. We'll be right back. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from ShackNews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from Weekend Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
You ready to sing along there, Jeff?
I know. Yeah. Like,
all right, we are back. Before we get into the sports corner, since we did a little UFC there, I'll break it up with a little Toy Soldiers Cold War, which, I don't know, Jeff, you didn't play Toy Soldiers.
I didn't.
Did you play Toy Soldiers?
Played a little bit at a press event. Haven't played the final game.
Did you play Toy Soldiers the first one?
Same. This is what I'm talking about.
Man, yeah. I can't believe it. Like, those are such fun games.
It is. Really? One thing I don't like, what is that style of game? I mean, I'm blanking on it.
The Tower Defense?
Tower Defense games. I'm not a fan of Tower Defense games. But one thing I liked about the first game that I'm sure this does too is where you can jump into.
That's the best part of the game.
Yeah, that's the thing that I think is really cool about it.
See, I think one of the reasons...
You can jump into what?
You could jump into... Like, if there's a... You set up a sniper tower, then you could hit a button and go into the sniper tower and actually play the first-person sniping game.
That's cool.
Or jump into the plane and fly the plane. Instead of just sending out waves, you can actually jump
in. So how does that work if you jump in and nobody's managing the over game?
Oh, you jump in and out.
You jump in and out.
Yeah.
So,
super fast.
Let me give you the premise. So the premise of both Toy Soldier games is roughly the same in that you're playing in you know, in your fantasy kids world or whatever, and you have a toy box, and you're protecting the toy box from the invading soldiers. Mm-hmm. And the game is laid out then on a 3D space, like a table or what, imagine like a table, and then there are different avenues from which the enemies will approach, hence the tower defense part. There are hard points within the map where you can set up your defenses. So that's also like tower defense. And then you have different defenses that you can set up. And then once you've set those up, you can beam down into them and play the game as a shooter.
Hmm.
Now, I think that depending on how you approach the game, you wind up with a very different perspective of it. If you're into tower defense games and you approach it as a tower defense game, it has some flaws that I think would make it not as fun as a tower defense game. I come at it differently. I come at it as a guy who used to like those like silly like beachhead defense games where you're just like shooting crap, and this is exactly that. It's like you jump in and you shoot a bunch of crap and you get to bounce around. It's totally shooting gallery for me.
Yeah,
it's totally shooting gallery for me. It's shooting gallery with a little bit of structure to it, as opposed to tower defense with a little bit of shooting gallery to it.
I see. So you don't really you're not really invested in the tower defense stuff as much.
So the thing with the tower defense game is that because you're bouncing in and out of the defense points all the time, and because they want to encourage you to do that, the towers, number one, you get distracted from the tactical part pretty easily, because a lot of the time you're spending in that third person view inside the game, you know, inside the game shooting space,
right,
shooting stuff, being part of the game that way. So you're not out there just managing your towers. Like, you're not just sitting up there in a tower defense game. You're sitting up there high and you're watching the different waves of mobs come in, and you're like saying, oh, okay, well, this
crisis management.
And you're also thinking about like, how effective is this chain of towers that I've laid down?
Yeah.
You know, is like the freeze tower slowing them down enough so that the heavy cannons can hit them? And you're thinking about all those kind of tactical arrangements. Here, it's more like, I need a machine gun over in this area so that when the guys come from this direction, I can hop into the machine gun and go shoot them up.
Yes.
Or I need an anti-aircraft thing here.
That's lighter.
Yeah, that's exactly kind of how I felt about it when I played it. The first one is I only set up, not because I thought this is the best way to protect this route, just so I can slow them down enough so I can jump into something and start firing.
And that's exactly the way you want to play it. And as long as you're cool with that part, it'll be great. If you're looking, though, for a deep, like, not, I don't, does deep apply to tower defense? Like, there are good tower defense.
Sure.
They're great tower defense games. The name of that one that's on Steam just flew out of my head, but the one that, whatever, we'll come back to it. I'm not going to worry about that. But there are good tower defense
games. Plants vs. Zombies?
That's not a tower defense game. That is a home defense game. If you treat it, though, as a shooting game, I think it's very fun because you can hop in and do that. And then, of course, you also have the battery-operated toys. So Cold War moves forward into, the Cold War era with you taking on the terrible Russian invaders tracking America. And it's pretty hilarious. You get, like, an attack helicopter. You can fly around the battlefield. There's tanks that come in later. But the coolest of them all is that you get a commando who is basically a Rambo doll.
Awesome.
And he's pretty badass.
Awesome.
And so when you get Rambo, you can like hop in and run around the battlefield, shoot people up with your machine gun. You have like a rocket launcher and you can blow shit up. And one of the ways you get him is another mechanic they added, which is essentially like pulls off the Call of Duty idea, I guess, of kill streaks getting you rewards.
Hmm.
And if you get a 40 kill streak, then you get a what do they call it? I think they call it like a barrage, or it's not really a barrage. It's anyway, you get a reward, and it's like a random reward. And sometimes you get something mundane like an artillery strike, but then other times you get the commando, which is really cool. It's like comes in a toy box, and the toy box opens, and you get and you get, you know, packaging awesome. Opens, and you get Rambo. And there's another
is
one.
Is he like super big in comparison to the other toys?
Well, you're zoomed in pretty close, so oh, okay. he looks big. But
that was like a Godzilla situation. We're just like stepping on dudes.
It's really, I really like the game. It's fun. It's, I think it's, if they do another one, then it'll be interesting to see how they start to tie it together. Because one thing about the game is you could sit down, I think, over a weekend and play through all the single player stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, the campaign is not super long. So then it becomes a question of how, and this is definitely a high score fans game. Like, so then the question becomes, how into this sort of game are you to go back and play those levels over and over and over? Mm-hmm. For me, I think that it's fun. It sort of has, I mean, Trenched had that same sort of mentality as well, right? You're going to go back and keep getting better and playing the games over, right. playing the levels over, knowing the waves and that sort of thing. But if that doesn't appeal to you, then it might be a little limited. Now, there is co-op multiplayer in this.
Now that sounds fun.
So that is really cool. I want to try that out. Why don't you get this? We should. It'll okay. be fun. And there's also a versus mode, but there's only 3 versus mode maps. So I'm hoping that they'll do some, maybe if they're successful as they were last time, maybe they'll do some more maps. I should read up and see if they've announced any of that.
I'm,
cool
I'm pretty
did.
Sure that, yeah, I remember the first one had a bunch of DLC.
It did.
Yeah.
And
it even did some sort of some alien stuff, I think, the last DLC.
Well, the first one was World War One.
Yeah, I know, but I think that they actually did some alien stuff for it. Maybe I'm misremembering it.
I think you're misremembering.
Well, I'll look it up. I'm pretty sure they did.
Hmm. Anyway, I think it's really fun. I think that you have to temper your expectations towards, are you into it for shooting? And are you into the idea of going back and playing levels over? Because if those two things are, you know, depending on how you answer those things, you may or may not be super into this. I think it's a little more, although it's really well put together. And man, the personality of the game is amazing. The title song is, it's so funny how close it's like to Fly Me to the Danger Zone Top Gun song. It's like you can almost, it's like you almost hear it and then he changes it just enough to not get sued. It's kind of awesome. So you've got that, you've got Rambo and great. I mean, it just has a, it has really cool character and flair to it. I just, yeah, I wish it was, I don't know what I wish it was. I wish it was, I really enjoy it. I'm just,
it's a budget game too, right?
Yeah, it's $10.
It's yeah. XBLA. Yeah,
yeah it's XBLA.
Oh, it's XBLA.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's XBLA. It's part of the Summer of Arcade promotion.
Oh, it is.
It's this week's yes. Summer of Arcade promotion brought to you by Microsoft International.
I'll check that out. Yeah, that sounds fun.
It is fun. If you get it, we should play some co-op because
yeah,
I would love to try the co-op.
That sounds like the real sweet spot for that game is the co-op because then you could hop in. Somebody else could be placing towers. And you could, they could hop in.
And the fun part is, of course, then you get, you know, you get, there's like a monetary system and you upgrade your towers, and upgrading your towers is definitely key. Yeah, I'm having fun with it. The nuclear attack. there's one of the bonuses you get for a 40 strike that's a nuclear attack. There's another one you get that's like very, like, these guys have obviously been Call of Duty, the more I think about it, because there's another one where you're a gunner on an AC-130. You know, it's like, and it's like exactly like that scene out of Modern Warfare where you're like in night vision, you're like, Roger, we got two tangos on the ground by the house over there on the northwest. Got them.
Yeah.
It's very, very much.
I clearly got this game confused with Army Men. That's what I was thinking of the whole time.
Yeah, you did. Which is interesting.
You were like XBLA, Summer of Arcade, and I was like, oh, okay.
There's some similarities there, but this is a little more structured towards building off the tower defense idea.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then, like, the frustration part, I think, for the tower defense guy to wrap this up is that when, because it does want to, I don't think if I made, did I make this point or not, is that it wants you so badly, it wants to encourage you to be jumping into the turrets that when you're not in the emplacements, they're relatively ineffective.
Hmm.
Even upgraded, you're like, oh,
really?
That's yeah. You have to be really careful about watching that. You know, you have to watch your waves. And if you're like working on an infantry wave, but you're near the end of it, and say, for instance, the next wave is like an aircraft wave, you want to go ahead and hop over to the anti-aircraft turret because don't expect it to handle the beginning. Let your guns mop up the last of the infantry and get on the anti-aircraft as quickly as you can, or whatever. You get on the anti-tank as soon as mm-hmm. you can, because untended, they're just. They don't make full use of their capabilities.
Right. This ain't like Ronco. You can't set it and forget it.
What?
He's talking about Ron Popeil, bro.
Ron Popeil.
What is that?
Don't dwell. It's made of McBrisket.
Hey, since you're talking, I want to hear your thoughts on Madden. You've been playing a little bit more.
Yes. My thoughts on Madden are, I think that this is a very interesting conversation I was having with someone the other day. I think that though I think that though they put a good effort into the game every year, and I don't mean that as like a pat on the back thing. They work very hard. You know, they, matter of fact, there was some turnover in the team this year, and one of the things that I think was really on these guys' mind was, how do we make this game unique? How do we really do some things that we hadn't messed with before? And one of the things they hit on was presentation.
Right.
And there are a couple of things there that I'm really enjoying. You know, for instance, the new perspective and kicks.
Yeah.
And that means a lot to me. The entrances are nice. I'm not as overwhelmed by the entrances because they don't really materially affect the game on the field.
Feels like something you'd skip after seeing it twice.
And it is that game on the field that I really want to talk about, because though it continues to evolve, it needs to really revolutionarily evolve. And I think that what they get caught up with is that you can't sell. I think that they feel it would be very hard for them to come out and say, we're going to sell Madden this year because we're putting a better game on the field. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, they always come out and they say, you know, here's the sheet of the things we've done differently this year. We've got new community features. We've got new camera presentation. We've got, it's like they want to have those tick boxes of, we have new blank, we have new blank,
right.
We have new blank. If they just came out and said, we're putting an unbelievably better game of football on the field, people would be, well, you always say that.
It's also hard to prove.
It is very hard to prove, right?
Yeah. I mean, being able to say, look at our new shiny thing. Then it's like, oh, well, okay, I can see that's a new shiny thing.
However, my counter argument to that would be that the people who play football very much enjoy football, and they still remember how good 2K5 was, mm-hmm. and they remember it because of how good the game on the field was, not because of the ESPN integration or because of something else. They remember it because how good the game was.
Is there any nostalgia, rosy-colored glasses for 2K5, or is it really that demonstrably better?
I'm not a huge football fan. I loved 2K5.
I did too. Yeah. I'm just asking it to be a devil's advocate here. Is it that much better than the current version?
Now, I haven't gone back and played it in a couple of years. A couple of years ago, back at 1UP still, though, we went back and played it just to see. And the thing that stands out about 2K5 is the speed and pace of game, and it much more seems to fit naturally with the way an NFL game mm-hmm. seems to feel.
Yeah.
And the other thing that you could really tell is even with not as strong animation systems, because obviously you're talking about an Xbox generation game,
yeah.
PS2 generation game, there's something about the player intelligence per player per position that worked better in that game than works in this game. These guys, and I understand, it's like Madden is trying to capture the excitement of the big play. And the excitement of the big play is great. 2K5 was fantastic at playing a good game of football mm-hmm. all the way through. And so while it may not have had 50 animations for a receiver to make an amazing catch, it had 500 different AI routines that receiver ran through in getting down the field on his route before he was in position to make a catch.
Not only just that, though, but it also did a really – it was a great game on the field, but it was a very entertaining game to play because it had that presentation, what EA is still trying to get now.
Yeah,
it already had
some
great presentation. Also, I think a lot of Madden fans remember after, you know, the whole situation with EA making the deal with the NFL, I think it was Madden 2007, which was the first next-gen one, was such a bad game that it sort of soured a lot of people throughout the years, and then they had to go back and really fundamentally change things.
Well, you know, another thing that's funny is, and I actually was talking about this with somebody, is like, I want to go pull that hilarious Eagles next gen.
Yeah, we were talking about that last
time. That was us.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to go pull that because I don't think they've still gotten to there. Yeah.
We were talking about, you know, Killzone kind of hit its target video.
Killzone hit its target video.
But they still have yet to hit that target video. That's true.
So, the upshot of all that is I think they continue to get distracted by features when the feature that this game really needs at this point is that, you know, the first thing, like, and that's a great, so here's another way of looking at it. What these guys did was they really came into the HD era, or like they put a lot of work into that. Okay, so maybe the engine is showing its age a little bit relative to, say, an NHL, because we are looking today, you know, for instance, the players, which we're going to talk about NHL, the players in NHL look
remarkably better than last year.
Yeah, they look really good. Really? They look really, really, really good. It's quite impressive. And matter of fact, the game on the field looks quite impressive. And FIFA looks quite impressive on the field.
Right.
And maybe this is a perception thing. I have, over the last couple of years, really gotten a strong sense that the FIFA and NHL teams could give two shits about back-of-the-box features and are just super hardcore about wanting to make a great game on the field. Hmm. And yes, they wind up with some stuff that the marketer guys can go out and market it, but it's a little more nerdy stuff. It's always like,
oh, yeah.
They want to talk to you about physics models and like goalie interactions.
Well, even the features, I mean, I was telling you, Garnet, that you can start playing your Be a Pro mode in the juniors as a 15-year-old kid in NHL 12.
Yeah.
Do you think...
So think about this. Oh, go ahead, sorry.
I was just saying, do you think that there's... Because Madden is the 800-pound gorilla, that it has less room to be like that? And because... I mean, I know that's not true, because FIFA sells like gangbusters overseas.
FIFA is their best-selling franchise now.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, I'm so America-centric that I...
And NHL does very well for them as well. What I was telling you...
Madden North America last year was the number two selling game on the NPDs, remember?
Right, but also worldwide with FIFA, it ended up being, this is according to, I think Peter Moore said this, was their number one selling.
So they sell a lot of sports games.
Yeah. They sell a lot of sports games. Well, and this is a conversation we were having before. I think that you look at Madden, you look at NHL and FIFA, you can tell a major difference between those teams interacting with each other, because EA Canada does FIFA and NHL. Mm-hmm. So they share technology within that house. It doesn't seem like they're sharing much technology with the guys doing Madden. They're on there doing their own thing. You know what I mean? Well,
similar sort of field sports,
yeah,
though.
Exactly.
I mean,
right. But
I don't
also
know how much they could share.
But I mean, the animations, the physics animations that have been changed throughout the years in FIFA, or the Be a Pro stuff that began on FIFA, which was just one game that got shifted into a whole thing in NHL, which is even bigger now in both FIFA. You know, there's the Ultimate Team stuff now that FIFA 12 is going to have integrated into it. A lot of like these features that we're talking about, including the technology upgrades in those two franchises, that sometimes I just don't see it happening in Madden. Because the last time I remember Madden really evolving was the year that it was the first year it came out here, and it was one of those bare bones next gen releases, and they got flack for it, and they really went back and created a good experience next time around.
I agree.
So I don't know. I don't know what they're adding that's really making it the next game you must purchase for Madden fans.
So they keep patching on stuff, and you know, so they have better animation system. They have a nice contact system. There's a good sense of guys, like the tackling and animations in the game are really nice. But I feel like instead of them improving the core game and those happening as a result, that they're doing is saying, well, let's put a better animation system in here, or let's put a better whatever system in here. Mm-hmm. And so to wrap this up real quick before, because we're going to talk about Madden, I'm sure, many more times, because it's like still 2 weeks out. The first thing I will tell you right off the bat is that especially with a good running back, people are going to be freaking out because, again, not freaking out, but will be potentially frustrated because, again, this year, there's a lot of that dude sliding off running backs that they have completely dead to rights.
Right. Just because it's a marquee name?
Because I think they're trying, you know, they get in that same fuzzy space that it's sort of like a Deus Ex, especially the original game, had to deal with. You're playing a shooter, and yet at the same time, I'm telling you, you're building your character up and you have stats.
Yeah. Right.
So when you aim the gun at my head,
dice roll.
Do you want the gun to hit me in the head because you put the crosshair there, or do you want to do it because you have a 98 accuracy?
Right.
And it's a really tough question. So, you know, now when I'm Adrian Peterson and I'm coming around the right guard, do you want me to slip a tackle because I made just the right move at just the right time, or because I'm Adrian Peterson and I've got a 98 elusiveness?
Right.
And it's a very difficult equation. It's a very difficult equation.
Do you not think that FIFA animation and physics system would work in Madden? Because, forgive me if I'm wrong, maybe it's integrated already, but I mean, that system was so big for EA that they're using the same physics and animation system for Battlefield.
I'm pretty sure they're sharing.
Okay.
I mean, the physics system in Madden is...
Is it...
It's good.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really good.
I haven't played the new Madden, so I'm talking out of my ass when we're...
But, I mean, and I've harped on this like a broken record for the past 4 or 5 years. Football fans know that football games are won on the line, and the line play in Madden is still a mess. Mm. There's just not good AI on the linemen. And one thing that's interesting is, like, here's another deal. It's like for feature sets, they continue to push on defenses to pick up modern innovation in defense. And modern innovation in defense, especially in the last few years, has been all kinds of crazy substitutions and formations to get guys out of position and bring them from odd angles,
yeah,
which is all well and good, except that offensive lines in Madden just are clueless sometimes on how to handle that.
Right.
And it's just absolutely, they get absolutely lost. You'll see guys just like stand there in a blocking pose and there's a guy right in front of them and they don't touch them.
Yeah.
And until they, like, I don't need you to worry about all the other stuff you're worrying about when you still have that in your game.
Mm-hmm.
When you fix that, then worry about the other stuff.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Let's move on to NHL because we don't have a lot of time left. And
we got 10 minutes.
Well, we got 10 minutes, but I want to talk about it for at least 45. Everyone, sit down.
Hunker in.
Get yourself a cup of Tim Hortons.
Oh, my God.
God, I miss that coffee.
And a cruller.
And a cruller. Boston cream. Come on. Let's not go crazy, guys. Maple.
Right? Maple.
Maple.
That's Canada. Where it's at.
So I got a review code of NHL 12 and... There is a huge difference between playing the game on the ice. We were talking about how the game has evolved on the field for Madden. It is very different between NHL 12 and 11. There is a lot of stuff that they changed in the last couple of games. You know, they've added a lot of independent physics for limbs. So when you hit a guy, it looks like you've actually hit him. Yeah, but the problem is that if you are, you know, Zdeno Chara, who's the tallest guy in the NHL.
He was in Final Fantasy, wasn't he?
I think so. I think he was one of the ultimate weapons. You know,
it's a summons.
Tallest guy in the NHL versus, you know, a guy who's really short. You go to check Chara and it doesn't compensate for the sizing of the players.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's what happened in NHL 12. So you would be, you know, battling in front of
They added that now.
They've added that now.
That's
so
cool.
If you're in front of the net, Chara, who's on defense, if you're in front of him and he is trying to push you out of the way, he's going to push you out of the way in NHL 12. There's no battle anymore because he is so much bigger than you. You have to figure out a better strategy to work around that. Another thing they've added in this game that hasn't been in the game before is that the goalies in NHL 11 and 10 and going back have always been this brick wall. Once they have the puck and you try to touch them, it's basically like you've hit invisible wall.
Exactly.
You can't do anything now. Now they all have independent physics as well when the whistle blows. So if you're going in for a breakaway, you can actually go into the goaltender and try to scoop it underneath him.
Oh, that's awesome.
Isn't that illegal?
It is. I mean, like, if you, it depends on the situation. Like, if you go in and like kick the puck in, then of course it's going to be illegal. But you can actually try to work around the goaltenders. You don't have to try to just shoot. You were commenting when I was playing the game that I was doing a lot of long shots because
I learned
in NHL 12 that your best bet is to try to screen the goaltender because, you know, like I said, the sizing doesn't matter between the players. You screen them by putting your players in front of them and you try to tip the puck in behind the goaltender.
Now, is that realistic to the real game?
It is and it isn't because, like I said, there are certain situations where you just can't screen the goaltender if you have a defender who is much bigger than your offense, right? They're going to push you out of the way. They're going to squeeze you out of the way. So it doesn't really work. But that was the way that I learned how to play NHL 11 really effectively. Now it's a lot more, the game is a lot more close up. So you can really go in for these breakaways because one thing that's great about it is you can sort of deke out a player and they will lose their footing. Whereas before they were on this static animation of like, okay, now I have to turn 180 degrees. You can actually deke a guy out and he loses his footing and even might fall on the ice behind you because you've deked him out so well. And that is something that I look at this game versus a Madden. And again, I haven't played the new Madden, but it just seems like this is something that they constantly keep trying to update with FIFA and NHL.
Mm-hmm.
Really putting an emphasis on the realism of each player's movement on the ice or on the field in FIFA. You know what I mean? Like there are a lot of amazing things that happen in, you know, hockey and plays and in FIFA that don't really translate very well if you have a static animation system like that where there's no real physics applied to
so
it.
So you're really into this whole like full contact physics engine.
I am. The thing that bothered me about last year's is that they did add that full contact stuff and sort of independent physics for each body part. And the thing that bothered me is like you would hit a guy sort of wing him and then he would do a crazy flip and you'd end up injuring like five or six characters. It was like a sniper was trying to take them out, like that Jean-Claude Van Damme movie or something. So I mean, like that, I'm talking about Sudden Death. It's a great
yes
movie.
Of course you are.
So I do really like it. I was a little worried at first because last year's version was just, you know, every time you hit a guy, he would just go tumbling down like a tumbleweed, and it would just totally screw up the entire
experience. Yes, I was going to say, I mean, another thing I remember them talking about in demos of this was that you'd have more body control. So you'd be able to, you know, like, for instance, if you're like a heavy guy, you'd be able to recover from those hits faster. You'd be able to, like, did you notice that?
Huge difference. Because I, especially playing Be a Pro mode, you sort of learn the limitations of your character that you create, especially if you're going in for a... The thing is they always have used brute force to stop you rather than real tactics. If you go in for a breakaway, the guys are just going to try to knock you down other than trying to work as a team. I don't know if I'm really making sense when I say that. So they can get the – they worry more about you as a player than the puck and positioning. People sort of break position to go after you specifically. It's sort of like when you play Call of Duty and you have a squad of guys behind you. And the AI just shoots at you.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's sort of like the computer compensates more to battle against you as a player versus playing the game. And it seems like they're getting better at balancing it out so everyone is playing their positions correctly, which I think is really cool. So that's pretty much it. It does look so much better this year than it did last year. Character.
Dude, it looked great last year.
It did look good, but I'm saying it looks better than that this year. I think that, you know, there's glare off of... all of the surfaces, that's really realistic. You see, like, the reflection on the ice. You see reflections on the boards and stuff. You know, it does a better... One thing that NHL 11 did, if you notice, if you stop playing the game and you just sort of watch the ice, what they do to fake it is that the ice template of, or the background image of the ice, just starts to get progressively more skated on. It's not based on what you've actually done. It just gets more skated on. So it looks like, oh, wow, I've skated so much that it has all these streaks on it. It's like it fakes it is what it actually does. So this year, what I was noticing is it actually does compensate a little bit more in this version where you do see realistic streaks when you play throughout stuff in the presentation. And that stuff is just cool. It's like super nerdy. I mean, I really want to play the Be a Pro stuff that I haven't had a chance to. I only got to play some exhibition games because that's where it gets super, like, you start as a 15-year-old.
Somehow kid. I have a feeling, based off the tightness of the grip on the controller he had, that he'll be playing NHL quite a bit over the next couple of weeks. I think we'll have a hockey update.
I'm having fun with it. I've only played a couple of matches, and I did miss an open net twice. Garnett wanted to make fun of me because of that.
I like how I got him to actually just fall on his own sword.
If I fuck up, I'll say it. Whatever.
I also was
down 2-0 in the third period as the Leafs versus the Habs and ended up winning 3-2 in overtime.
I didn't see that.
So complete fiction.
Fuck off. I'm
not sure that happened. I saw him fall down 2-0.
Real quick, though, one thing that I haven't seen yet, but this is sort of the fact sheet of the game, is it has legends for the first time.
Yes.
You can play as legendary players.
Seen a couple of videos late. They had
Gretzky, Waugh. Yeah, they had a lot of old characters. Roenick is in there. Oh, a bunch of other stuff. And
Tim Horton?
He might be in there. He was a hockey player.
I know. That's why I said it.
I don't know if they have, like, the old style guy. I might be.
Gordie Howe?
I don't know if they go that far back. I think the furthest back they go is like Lemieux and Gretzky and that stuff. But I would love to play like Johnny Bauer. Yeah, I'm talking about shit that you guys are just like, they're politely smiling and nodding at me now. I kind of feel like I just want to leave and go play NHL. Fuck you guys.
All right. Well, don't you leave, because when we come back on the other side, I'm still going to talk about Portal Co-op for a minute because I just wanted to bring that up, because co-op gaming is something I'm getting back into a little bit. And then it is. Everything's better when you play with someone else.
That's right? True.
So we have that. We have some warning stuff, and we still have newsy news, all that, when We Can Confirm comes back on the other side. What the hell is this game about?
El Shaddai. What is El Shaddai?
Garnet's gonna give me this blank look.
What is El Shaddai? What is El Shaddai?
Sounds like this game was put together by a marketing team.
Looks awesome.
What the hell is this game about?
Nephilim are taking over the world.
Nephilim. What the heck is El Shaddai?
Based on the book. It is a weird part of the dead sea scrolls. Based on weird stuff. That was probably normal. This is all tough. What is Elsha God? Garnet's gonna give me some blank look.
It was pretty tough. I was gonna say.
Wait, is that wait, the wait, song from your game?
It is not. No, the song is really popular, though.
Oh dear, I have a lot of blank looks.
Nephilim.
Nephilim's
any song that has the word Nephilim in it, top 40 hit.
It's a hit. That's a hit, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, so I wanted to talk about co-op gaming a little bit before we got away from games, because I've been playing a number of co-op games with a girlfriend and just finished up Portal 2's co-op.
Yep.
And
easy for you to say.
Yes. Two things out of that. Number one, and I'm really was excited, especially this week, to hear that there's DLC coming, because Valve takes a long time to make stuff, and I appreciate that. That's why it's so good. The nature of, and we remember we were talking about Portal and Portal 2 and how I sort of liked Portal 1 a little better because it was a little more just puzzly, whereas Portal 2, they brought in a lot of narrative stuff and arguably made a bigger and more interesting game. Obviously, a lot of people love Portal 2. Let's not open that can of worms again. But I think that, like, I was ready for more DLC already for Portal 2. Like, give it to me. Put it in my veins. I want to play more of that. I want to play more. And the co-op part was God, we have so much fun with it. And I got to the end and I'm like, there's only like a few levels with the gels and they never introduced the white gel, which I understand the white gel. Like the white gel would probably be really difficult, I guess, to manage. I was ready for more puzzly. Like after you get past the beginning part, a hard logic puzzle level in co-op is even more fun than it is in single player, because instead of you just sitting there quietly racking your brain trying to figure it out, you are engaged. It's like, well, you could go over there. I think we need to put a light bridge over here. No, that's not going to work. And then like they have an idea, and you're like, and they're like, oh, like no, we need to put the bridge over here. And you're like sitting there pointing at the screen and moving stuff around, and it becomes like this incredible interactive brainstorming partnership that is fucking awesome.
Yeah,
and
agreed.
I'm floored by how good it is.
Yeah.
I'm floored by how good it was.
You should say specifically you played split screen. You didn't play online.
Right? We did both. Actually, we started split screen and then we finished up playing online. And even online, it was fine because you're still talking or whatever. It was most fun when we were like sitting together, like pointing at the screen and stuff.
Right.
But the online, like the live part is still good, especially if you have voice. I mean, if you didn't have voice, I think it would be really challenging. But it's still easy.
Well, using the sort of iconography that they allow you in co-op is
works.
Yeah,
works. But I mean,
it's a good addition to have.
It's a good addition. It's nice when you're talking at the same time. So when you say, "Hey, that thing over there," you can just like be boink.
Yeah, and place it right here.
Exactly. Yeah. So I just we could have tackled another 30 levels easy, and especially harder ones, because he's like, you get in a groove and then the harder ones, the ones that actually stop you for a while, you just like they're awesome. Mm-hmm. And then you get past them, you're like, that was so fucking cool.
Yeah.
So Valve, if you're listening, do more portals.
I think they
it's
know.
Coming in September. I'm
do
not
more,
entirely sure what
do
the
more
DLC
portals
to be.
Do more co-ops portals. Do more co-op portals, please. I think we're gonna do some Borderlands next.
That's great. That's a great game for co-op.
Yeah. You know, I never played that much of it, but
Oh my God, it's so good. It's so good. It was the Totally Rad Show Game of the Year that year.
Was it really?
It was.
I'm sure everyone I know, not everyone, but many people that I know played it co-op.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah.
And it was consistently basically tabbed as Diablo in first person in Sci-Fi Wasteland.
I mean, yeah.
Because you're picking up stuff all the time. And
yeah, it's a big loot grab.
Yeah. I won't bore you guys talking about it when we get it, but I'm looking forward to that. We're going to see Borderlands 2 in
PAX.
A couple weeks.
Very
at PAX.
Excited.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm bummed that THQ isn't going to be there, because I wanted to see Darksiders 2, but I guess they're not going
to
be there.
You just wanted to play Saints Row again.
I do.
And we have so many games coming in the next few weeks.
Yeah. Well, it's begun. I mean, Deus Ex is the beginning of
the
holiday end. Rush.
The end of your free time,
The end of my free time.
Beginning of the deluge. And we still also have one more show to go. Gamescom, of course, has wrapped up this past week. A lot of news coming out of that, which we'll hit in the next segment. But then there's still Tokyo Game Show to go.
Yeah.
We did last year. Then we're going to do the half and half show, half with me over in Tokyo in 8-4. And then the other half we'll throw to here. And then we'll do like the split show again. Since that was fun last year.
It was fun.
Pretty sure we'll have Mr. Bettenhausen on. We'll have Mark McDonald and John Riccardi and Sporks. And it'll be a great show. Everyone will love it. It'll be fantastic. So what do you say we talk about some some listener feedback stuff. Okay, let's see. Where am I going to start? I want to start with this one. This is old. So this one is from actually 3 weeks ago. And I liked this question to tease us and talking about MMOs a little bit. Lorm Fall asks, the Star Wars discussion got me thinking. Does anyone else think that MMOs are focusing too much on solo content? So if you remember about 3 weeks ago, we were talking about Star Wars and whether or not it would be a problem that it was so focused on single player that they've been repositioning it almost as, not almost, they've been repositioning it as KOTOR 3, and then they do that whole, it's actually KOTOR 3, 4, 5, and 6 because we're going to keep building on it. It's a single player game, blah, blah, blah. Does anyone else want an MMO where you're better off grouping up from the beginning and learning how to use your abilities in a group as you go, and leveling as a group is as fun as the end game content?
How is that not what MMOs are?
I think specifically they're asking about from the beginning, right?
Well, no. I think that this is in response to, and it's, we know WoW made a big move in this department, in that the games oftentimes are, yes, it's a big open world that a lot of people are playing in, but you see a lot of people soloing. WoW became way more, even more solo-friendly. It was built as a solo-friendly game and then became more solo-friendly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the big trend recently with, the Warhammer had this, and Rift, is the walk into an area and you're automatically in a group just because you walked into that area.
Yeah,
and you're all doing a quest because you just happened to be in that location when that event happened.
Yeah, right.
So that's sort of you don't even need to find a group to group up with. You'll just be grouped by virtue of the fact that you're all doing the same thing at the same time in the same place.
And isn't the Old Republic thing more about they want to make sure that they can put that BioWare story flair on it, so they're like, it's going to have a single player, it's going to be single player story based, so you feel like you're making the difference in the world. Like, isn't that their whole thing? Where it's,
sure, I don't know how many pieces of flair it'll have, though.
Well, hopefully more than the bare minimum.
Some people like to wear
hopefully more than the bare minimum. Yeah, I don't know. I just MMOs have never really grabbed me, because I do prefer, maybe it'd be different now, because I kind of do prefer playing solo. The thing is I always worry about when I play an MMO and there's so many people who have been playing it for so long, and people restart new characters and they already understand all the mechanics, and then I'm a part of a group who have never played this game, and I'm immediately considered the person that has no idea what's going on. And
I think MMOs are much more friendly to that kind of experience than a FPS in multiplayer.
I will mostly agree with that, but only because the folks who really know how to play and are hardcore about that are higher level, and you wouldn't be able, you're not going to be able to jump in and join an end level raid, so you're not going to be expected to know exactly how to play your healer.
But even if you are the guy who just recently level capped and are hopping into, grind out some loot with some other people who are much more experienced, I tend to find that people are much more willing to step you through the process and in an MMO experience, because it's all cooperative. It's all, there's obviously faction on faction battles in most MMOs, but the people you're going to be communicating with, it benefits them that you do well. So
it's more of a friendly environment.
I find that to be the case. Yeah.
Because I think when you play a first person shooter, and at least I don't have this idea that I'm not as effective as other people. A guy could be level, a guy could be level 60, but his gun is not, if we're using the same weapons, it's not like he's using a higher level weapon.
But the difference in an MMO is that I can be part of a team, and I can just be looking at my kill stats. I can play a solo game in a team environment. You cannot do that in most MMOs.
I think one of the things Lauren was getting at is maybe structuring things a little more. And this is interesting in juxtaposition to people telling me that, if you want to play Diablo 3, you should be able to play it however you want to. I think what he's saying, though, somewhat is should MMOs, or should there be MMO focus on making players be playing in groups because they need one another, because they can't play by themselves. Did you play Final Fantasy XI much, either of you?
No.
Okay, so XI, you were able to solo through about level 10, but after that, you had to be in a group pretty much to be successful, to play together, because you needed 2 points. Number one, you needed everybody else. You needed a group that worked together, because you needed you couldn't just go out. You didn't do enough DPS if you weren't a DPS. You didn't do enough healing if you weren't in healing. And then you also had these, what's the name of them? I think it was Renzerukens. You had these team attacks that you got team attack bonuses for, and they stacked elemental damages that you really needed to get into play, especially against any of the bigger mobs that were out there. So you quickly, as a result of that, built, even in pickup groups, like a cool report, a cool ability of like had that great sense of teamwork, that great sense of everybody working together and doing stuff. And at the same time, it did mean that you probably weren't going out and soloing the game.
Well, but any well-designed MMO isn't going to want to shut off one pathway to the player. If you're the guy that loves to be solo, I mean, the first time I played World of Warcraft, I soloed to 60. That's how I played the first.
I disagree.
And then the second time, but no. What I'm saying is that there's going to be content that I couldn't do as a solo player. There's going to be content that I need. That's going to be a carrot on the end of a stick that's going to lure me into wanting to group up and learn those dynamics. But to say that, well, at level 10, the game ends for solo players and you have to group up, I think that's
restrictive. It doesn't end, but it got pretty difficult.
Well, right. I think that's unnecessarily restrictive. You can have both and have certain benefits to grouping up and a whole side of the game that you learn and get into that way, but not closing off the ability to just play if you're the kind of guy who really doesn't want to interact with other people.
I wonder if they think that from a design standpoint that maybe it's a barrier to entry if you have to always rely on other people to be with you at all times.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that there's like, you know, if I want to play a first-person shooter and I call my friends and say, hey, let's all jump in and play this game and we can group up. You know, World of Warcraft, for example, has so many subscribers around the world that you may go online and not find people that you're comfortable playing with, and you constantly have to jump into these situations. So maybe that's a barrier to entry in terms of their design, that they just are making it a little bit more friendly for, hey, if you don't have your friends online, you could still enjoy this stuff on your own. You don't have to rely on other people to be there in order to give you this content.
I'll say that one thing that stood out to me, Lauren, when I read your question was that I think that potentially what you're talking about is part of the reason that I grew disinterested in MMOs because...
You mean uninterested? Sorry, go ahead. I'm that guy again. I hate when I'm that guy, but I'm that guy.
But you're being that guy.
I grew uninterested in those games. Is that better?
Yes, thank you.
Today on Grammar Chat.
Disinterested means impartial.
Yes, okay, great.
Go ahead.
Thanks.
This is how I lose my job on this show.
You want to go play in the freeway? Awkward silence.
How did you lose interest?
I got uninterested in them because especially even playing WoW, I found that so much of the time I was still doing things where I was playing by myself, but I was playing an open-ended game where I was doing the same things over and over, and there wasn't a finite end to it, and yet I still felt like I was playing a single-player game in a larger multiplayer world,
and
I wanted to just go play a single-player game. I'd go play a single-player game.
At that point is when you're supposed to just naturally transition into the lure of it is playing with your friends. I think that's the end game of all MMOs is... Play with your friends.
Or play with
the guild that you're in or the
clan. And we'd done that stuff. And yet at the same time, I just felt like I was, I think to answer the question, I do want and I would be interested in an MMO that was better off at building a design that encouraged that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's a lot of challenges that we raised.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that make it, like you don't want to wall people off.
Isn't that kind of what the Rift and Warhammer thing tries to do? It's like you just automatically become you're part of a group to sort of get you used to working with other people so you can sort of explore and look for that stuff on your own.
It's cool that it creates a common goal that's just happening out there, and the rewards for those for accomplishing those feats are very very desirable.
You know, world events in Guild Wars 2, I think, are going to have a lot of that same. World events in Guild Wars 2 look freaking badass.
One of the biggest things I'm excited to see at PAX is Guild Wars 2.
Oh, dude, the game looks so good.
I'm very excited.
They need to finish that and get it out to us.
Yeah.
And then it's funny, though, that we'd be talking about, I'd be talking about finishing single-player games, because you guys always joke with me about that. Although, I do tend to finish a fair number of games. I enjoy finishing games quite a bit. As a matter of fact, one of my rules that I put in place for myself several years ago when I was like really in the you definitely go through a point in doing this business professionally where you get like the grind starts to get to you a little bit.
Hmm.
I think.
Yeah.
And one of the things that really broke it for me was I realized that I was starting like 50 games and finishing none of them.
Yeah.
And so I started making this rule of like, hey, you know, every couple of three games, no, I'm just going to finish a game because it's really like it's a great sense of satisfaction. I really, really enjoy that. There's an article recently that Alpha Bovine pointed out on CNN that Blake Snow wrote about about how few people finish games. And he and Alpha Bovine said in response to this, he says, while we as hosts, speaking to us, are in the business of reviewing games and it makes sense that there would be a big pile of shame, how would we attribute the 10% finishing rate, which is what the article states, for the general population, as cited in the article? And before we move forward, I want to just say that one of the things that I really dislike a lot about this article is that this argument about only 10% of people finishing the games is predicated on this quote. What I've been told... So it's already someone giving you a secondhand explanation.
So they have a good source, is what you're saying.
Oh, it's great.
Okay.
It's a great source. So they're interviewing
this
a guy.
Is CNN.
What I've been told as a blanket expectation is that 90% of players who start your game will never see the end of it unless they watch a clip on YouTube, says Keith Fuller, a longtime production contractor for Activision. Keith, I mean no disrespect to you whatsoever. However, this article citing someone who you don't even know or have any statistical reference point from makes this whole thing a bunch of crap.
Well, what does Keith work on? Like Guitar Hero? Because I would see that.
There's no frame. Well, what I've been told
The only way that you'd be able to know that is if you were to look at the data that you pull from Microsoft's API for the achievement stuff, which they do data mine for. But, you know, PlayStation doesn't have anything in place for them to know
that. The article also cites some stats from Raptor, which I think is relatively reliable from the standpoint of the hardcore people who sign up for Raptor.
Let's suppose that there's some truth here.
Okay, so yeah, what I wanted to say is that I think that what this is interesting here is that I think it was Rake looking for a foundation point for what we all think happens, which is that a lot of people buy a lot of games and don't necessarily finish them. And I'm sure that is to a degree true. I think the 10%, 90% thing is a little crazy. Blake Snow then cites three principal points to why it is that people don't finish games. We'll try to roll through them. The first one is this idea of the aging gamer. So this is actually good because he's got the facts down here. He's got them. I forget where he pulled them from, like the ESA or something. Average age of a gamer now is 37.
Yeah, that's ESA.
And the most frequent buyers are the folks who buy the most games. That average age then goes up to 41. Now, of course, that reflects that people buying games are older. Like, you know, 14 or 15-year-olds are probably having games bought for them. Mm. So that they're probably not as much figured into that as well. But obviously, folks have gotten older. And as we get older, we have more time constraints on our lives. We're raising families, we have careers, we have other things, you know, other likes and dislikes, other likes and interests and things that we do.
Right.
So I think that definitely plays into this to some degree. What do you guys think about this aging thing? Like, big deal? Does that change how much finish games?
Certainly.
My question of the week this week was, what is the game that I spent the most time on? And my answer was, you know, a lot of the examples I have are from when I was a kid, because I had a lot of time to play games, mm-hmm. and now it's a very different situation. And, you know, I'm playing Deus Ex right now for review, and that's going to take like 60 hours, 70 hours. I remember playing Fallout New Vegas, and that was a 60, 70-hour game. So I don't know. I think it's strange. Of course, it's hard to argue this one point without remembering this entirely strange stat of 10% of gamers are the ones that complete them. But I do think time is a big factor, especially our perspective on it is extremely skewed, though, because we have a responsibility to play a lot of stuff, whereas, you know, the average gamer may not have that on their plate as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do think time is an element, of course. And I mean, it'd be interesting to see how many people of the, 11, 12 million that bought that COD Blops or whatever, how many of those people finished the first single player? Because I bet it'd be much higher than 10%.
Oh, yeah, it's gotten so short. That's a crazy thought. Yeah.
But and so it depends on the kind of game you're talking about, for sure. But I also think
how many more
games being made. There's so many more games.
And welcome to point number two, folks.
Yeah.
Were you reading that?
No, I wasn't.
That was his second point, is that there's a glut of games on the marketplace. And there's so many games competing for our time. And that and I found it interesting, because what he didn't bring up, but I've always thought is the real demon in this situation, is how many of them get so aggressively marketed and then stacked right on top of each other. So you wind up with not just a glut of games, but a glut of games in the moment in which you exist.
Yeah.
And then you go through periods where, and we laugh about it, but we frequently do talk about, well, there's a dry spell, I don't know what to play.
Right.
And
when there's games sitting on your shelf that...
And there,
yeah.
Because you've gotten taught also that you're supposed to expect the new release. Like, there, you start to get into that, I'm supposed to pick the next release, I should be playing the next new release.
Yeah, this idea of like, oh man, there's nothing out, and then you forget that your shelf has like seven games that you purchased that, yeah, like, you have not played.
L.A. Noire is sitting there. Crysis 2 is sitting there.
I started playing Dead Space 2 just recently. You know what I mean? Like, it's so strange. And then, sorry, and then this DLC, I think, makes another big lump in it too. It's because... You know, I Assassin's Creed 2 was a game I loved, and I downloaded all the DLC because I wanted to play as much as I could of that game, and I never got to it.
Yeah.
And I bought it and paid for it. But I think our perspective on it is very skewed. I would love to hear more, like, the response to this in the comments and hear what, like...
This was a late comment into the show thread, so hopefully if you go by shacknews.com and hop into the comments for this show, this would be a great topic, I think, of discussion of how many games do you finish... What contributes to whether or not you finish a game? Yeah. So, you know, one thing that came up this week for me because of talking about Catherine last week was my two-strike rule. And my two-strike rule is part of a subset of finishing games because not getting too many games started and not letting myself get pulled down too many games leaves me the time to finish the other games.
Right.
And that's partly the reason that I have the two-strike rule. And as much as people are like, oh, go back to Catherine, set it on easy, there are a number of games that I want to play, and I've devoted X amount of time to it, and I feel like it's time to go get the next one because this rule has worked out really well for me. And yeah, it means that I miss some things. Yeah, I'm going to miss the rest of Catherine, and yeah, it's a bummer. And at the same time, it means that I am going to go finish something else and have a good time with that. Yeah. And that makes me happy. So I think that that's a good trade-off. The glut of games also reflects, I think, that we... You know what's weird is we haven't done a good job of... One of the things that comes up is like size. Like, one of the things they talk about in this is, you know, length of campaigns and how long people invest in games. And I mean, I know I've beat this drum before on prior version of the show. Someone will bring it up and laugh about it. But remember when they tried to do the Sin episodes on Steam?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I still think that, A, that was a really good idea. And maybe it was ahead of its time because one of the things that you see out of these two elements of folks who are older and have less time to play and the glut of games is that, and then, as a matter of fact, I'll go ahead and include the third point, because the third point plays into this as well. The third point that he made is the growth of multiplayer, and multiplayer really taking a lot of time, and it cites how many ridiculous hours people play multiplayer games for. It's something like 60-something hours for Modern Warfare 2.
Yeah.
Like people will play games that long, it's just they'll play them in multiplayer. And that, so it all reflects that. We'd like to play games in chunks, especially as we get older, because that's the sort of time period we have. Think about how much of even our television habits have become a function of a TiVo-like time-shifting idea.
Yeah.
Before 10 years ago, before TiVo was getting really popular, people were really concerned about what was going to happen with television. Television shows are in an okay space now because we can consume them when we want to, when they fit our lifestyle. We can grab them on Hulu, or we can grab them on Netflix, or we can get them on a DVD.
One thing that Dan has said to me a few times. He's like, people say, have you watched such and such yet?
Yes.
We never used to say that when we were
never
kids.
Never used to
say that.
Because
there was no yet. There was like, did you watch it or did you not watch it? Because it was on and you'll never get a chance to see it again.
I watch way more television now than I watched like 6 or 7 years ago. And it's because I can consume it when I want to, how I want to.
Right.
Now, a lot of these big games, that doesn't feel like the case because we don't know, you know, like, how often you want to sit down. First of all, it's nice to be able to sit down and play a game for a span. I much prefer, especially a big game, when I can sit down and play it for a couple of 3 hours and really get caught up in the moment and enjoy it. At the same time, I also oftentimes, if it doesn't, and I'm glad to hear about Deus Ex having save wherever you want. A lot of times I'm worried, like, am I going to sit down here and play for 30 minutes and really have to get up and not quite have gotten to the checkpoint? And when I come back, find out that the checkpoint was 2 minutes later.
There's always this idea of like, am I wasting my time here?
Yes.
You know what I mean? And that's what I think.
We've
that
got to get past that.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the old Splinter Cell games used to do that, where you would get to a point where you would pass all of this stuff that was crazy and then you would die and not hit the checkpoint, or you'd have to wait for the next checkpoint before you can go and live your life. You know what I mean? So that's something that's a big difference. With this whole thing, though, I'm wondering, think about a game like, what is the end of a game for this specific article? I mean, where is the end of the game for World of Warcraft? Where is the end of game for Madden?
That really applies.
Well, These are some of the best-selling games of every year. World of Warcraft is a huge-selling game. Madden is a huge-selling game. Where are the, what is the end game for that?
Well, what I think what Mr. Snow was talking about was reflective of narrative-driven, longer version games. You know, like the typical story adventure game, like an Uncharted. Uncharted's super popular. I think a lot of people finished Uncharted. I mean, am I crazy in thinking?
I'd be surprised if that was 10%.
Yeah, I would be really surprised. I think that, again, another piece that comes in there is the quality of the content.
Sure.
You know, you've got to have a number of games, especially, like, there was a long time there where I think there was a mentality amongst publishers, at least, that you've got to get your game longer, so extend the mechanic. Come back and do the same thing over, which for the player, not so fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, do you think that Portal 2 was better because it was longer than Portal 1? I don't think it really had much to do with
it. I didn't even notice that part, really.
Well, you know what I mean? Like, but that was the whole thing.
But there was so much cool stuff in there.
Right, you know what I'm saying? And there was a bunch of other stuff that added on top of that experience. So I don't know. I think it's a little...
You know, there's a the sort of hardcore board gaming community has this concept they talk about a lot called the cult of the new.
Mm-hmm.
And it's even more applicable there because you have a game that came out 50 years ago that plays identically to how it would play now. You know, you just put it on your table and you play it. It doesn't require technology to. And you know, it's an easy thing to get caught up in, especially doing what we do, that we're always talking about the next thing. Oh, right, that game is great, but coming out, you know, at PAX we'll be seeing this. And it's always, there's something newer and shinier on the horizon, and it's easy to feel like I can't. And one of the things I enjoyed a lot this last year was finishing Dragon Age 2, even though I don't think the game was a home run. I made a decision that I was going to finish that game, and I kept returning to it, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like once I allow myself to get out of the mindset or the trench of that game, if I'm in it and I know where things are and I remember what that guy said two chapters ago, and I, you know, when I'm in a game, I feel like that's the best time to finish it. I have a really difficult time moving away and coming back because I'm like, oh,
someone asked this question once. How many games do you play at one time?
Right. And it's almost always one. But I don't include, and this is another point I wanted to bring up, is that I don't include the fact that now we have cell phone games, millions of these independent games.
That's true.
These are all things that that suck up our time that we never had.
Now that's interesting because Blake Snow brings that up in his article about how people need time to check their Facebook. They want to go to a Twitter. They want to go play on their iPhone for a second.
Listen to podcasts. And yep. I mean, there's all these things that I never was able to fill my time with before.
And there's another argument, I think, for why, although it's been dallied with, someone needs to really figure out a way to give us gaming content in a truly episodically consumable format that we could enjoy.
You mean like Half-Life 3?
I think he means like Sam and Max.
Sam and Telltale Max. Absolutely. Telltale nails it.
Great job. I mean, and they have a great job. They do a really great job of scheduling everything of this is exactly when you are going to see this content.
And I think that it's funny because we could say that those are relatively niche titles, but they've been super successful for them. And I think it's because they hit the formula really well. Now, you want to hear something? Here's the probably the most depressing quote from this article that I read. This comes from Konami's head of U.S. production, Jeremy Airy, who said to Snow in this article, "Long gone are the days of starting a game on a high-level concept. It's costly."
What does that mean?
So he was responding and talking to the massive campaign lengths of the bygone era, you know, where you'd have like an adventure game and you might have a campaign that lasted over 10 hours. Because it had some high concept.
And yet, Bethesda is putting out games consistently that sell well.
Think about a game that people are really looking for, Demon's Souls.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's a huge game with a big, crazy story.
Well, and so take it with a grain of salt, because it's coming from the head of U.S. production for Konami, by the way, who also has Metal Gear Solid.
Right, exactly.
At the same time, to hear a person who has the head of U.S. production title say that long gone are the days of starting a game on a high-level concept... That really bothers me. I mean, that's what else do you start it on?
Low level concept.
I mean, let's start a game that's
medium.
Just like I Yeah, just it's sort of baffling.
I kind of don't understand. He's kind of not saying anything. He's kind of not saying anything.
Well, and you know what I mean? This is also another thing that I've been thinking about a lot lately, which is I think that increasingly, because the practice of the design and art side of games has gotten so much better, that there's this broadening gulf between what the design houses are doing, what the studios are doing, and what publishers do.
Yeah.
And publishers, to me, do a fine job at what publishers are supposed to do. Market games, put them in boxes, get them out.
Distribution.
Point of sale, all those kind of functions. But increasingly, I don't think that they are in tune with where the developer's creative spirit is and getting out the message and what's exciting and hot and cool and fantastic and connecting with the audience and all of those things. I'm all about this idea that studios need to just take back all of that part of, you know, what sharing their passion and excitement for what they're building and let publishers do what they're good at. I'm not saying it in a negative. I'm saying it like get it back on a positive footing, get it back in where the people who are doing what they're best at are doing what they're best at.
So,
all right. What do you say? Are you got any wrap up thoughts? Anyone?
No, I mean, I concur.
All right.
That.
I think that there are certain questions about this industry. First, to Jeff's point real quick, this industry, journalism side, does not do a good job of talking about things after they're out.
No,
once the game is out, we forget about
it. But
that's
data.
A kind of a chicken egg thing too, because is that what the audience wants?
Right. Well, that's what I'm wondering too. I mean, there are some postmortem stuff that I think Gamsutra does really well. GamePro used to do something really well. But to my other point was that I think there are just certain questions that the audience will answer a certain way that we are going to have a very different answer to because of the nature of our jobs.
All right.
I think that's kind of
so
where
we'll read your answers to game completion, which will be interesting, and also on the MMO topic in the comments section on shacknews.com in the show thread. Right now, this is Mr. Perkins featuring Aaron G. West and Pop Life.
What's the matter with your pimpin' little mama? You're fresh off the plane, still dealing with the drama. Got a man you don't like, but the crib's super fly. Long as he pay the bills to the day that he die. And don't ask about a job, cause she ain't gon' try. She got auditions in the day, trying to hustle at night. In Hollywood, everybody's a star. Looking around, trying to see exactly who you are. A perfect picture painted for people who just unsure.
What's the matter with your life? It's the poverty bringing you down. You said a mailman jerking you round. Did he put your $1 million check in someone else's box? Tell me, what's the matter with your world?
Was it a boy when you wanted
was
a
it
girl?
A boy you wanted a girl? Don't you know straight hair ain't got no curl?
But you really ain't got it. At the bar trying to flick and flash, looking retarded. Let alone getting carded and you're only 19. It's surprising how you work it on a triple beam. In the hood you be banging, at the club you amazing. It's a little too much going on, life's crazy. Spiral down the hole, re-emerge in 2 days. At the cost of the life that you live in today. Superstars, Maseratis, you don't like nobody. I don't blame you, it was tough in the game for you shouty. We all post pivot and pray that the Lord know me. When times get bad, I'm looking for who owe me. The truth is nobody just ever wanna be lonely. Instead of getting hurt, I prefer to just be phony. And I don't wanna work, I just want the world to know me. You see me up in lights all day and all night. And the
is mine. Talking about a pop life.
Talking about a pop life.
Talking about a pop life.
Pop life. Everybody wants to be on top.
Everybody wants to be on top.
Everybody wants to be on top. Everybody wants to be on top.
What you putting in your nose?
but there won't be no water when the fire blows. Saying, everybody needs a thrill. We all got a space to fit. Everybody can be on time. Happy April funky, and this is Captain Funk.
Mr. Perkins featuring Aaron G. West and Pop Life.
It's a cover of a Prince song. What? Which, so amazing.
Which we will have all the details for in the show notes on shacknews.com. Also, if you want to get out and have a little fun, if you're on Facebook, you can head over to the Gamefly Facebook page for a little fan contest. You have your chance to win 250 schmackers.
250. You said you wanted to say smackaroos and bucks, and you said schmucks.
I know, it's fantastic.
We're here. You want us. Oh, my God. There's 250 of you. Yeah. We're schmucks.
Anyway, so you get 250 bucks and two tickets to the Call of Duty XP event in Los Angeles, California on September the 2nd and 3rd. So all you have to do to enter is become a fan of Gamefly on Facebook. That's facebook.com/Gamefly. Administered by the fantastic Mr. Del Rio.
Del Rio. You know, I'm going to give you a clap. I'm giving a clap to Del Rio.
He shall be administering that. So anyway, sign up. Yeah, you got a chance to win 250 bucks and a couple of tickets to Call of Duty XP where you can watch Zav do the obstacle course.
Oh, yeah. Fucking like crazy. Oh, man. Oh, sorry. It's going to be a sound that plays in my head. Garnet was playing some techno game. What was that game called again?
It's called Groove Coaster, dude.
Yeah, that's so it's like techno beats, and I was telling Dave, I was like, I think in my head, that's what Garnet hears throughout his entire day. It's just techno beats.
Probably true.
Look, I spared you guys. We didn't talk about it. I'm like still so fucking hooked up on Groove Coaster.
Good game.
It is really good.
Good game.
You have to play with headphones. You have to play with headphones. But I just go back and play the tracks over, and it's just fun.
It looks
cool.
Music's
great.
I haven't played it yet. Hey, let's move on to the news.
All right, newsy news time.
We're moving the news schedule around because that conversation we just had about people not playing or finishing single-player games, there was a report, Garnet, that you actually ended up writing the story on. Sony organized a panel about the future of video games, and veteran designer and consultant Mark Cerny offered his opinion, saying that he does not believe in the next 3 years that single-player games as we know them now are going to exist anymore. The example that he cited was, look at a game like Demon's Souls. It lets other people play and participate in the game that you are going through, how people interact with you. And he thinks that that and other social media games like Facebook is the future of where the single-player game is going. Now, Garnet, you wrote this story. Mark Cerny, known for...
I've watched a number of his talks. I think he's interesting in that he caused controversy. Mm-hmm. Because he oftentimes does make statements that seem to strike people as, you know, a little out there, a little too forward-looking. And then he has not been a self-promoter. He's been a guy who has stayed in the trenches working on games. If you go and look at his laundry list of accomplishments, it's pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. He has something like, I think it's 15 games that have shipped in excess of 2 million copies that he's worked on. I mean,
none of them single-player games, though. None of
them. Not a single one. Well, the thing that you point out in this article as well, Garnet, is that, you know, after that initial shock of that statement, what he's really saying is how we're playing the games what the games we're playing.
So he got your attention with that, but the real point that he's getting at is that, and he cites Demon's Souls, and I think it's a good one as an entry point, as of where social gaming intersects with single player gaming.
Right.
It's kind of like saying 5 years ago, websites as you know them will not be the same because there's going to be a like button on every article.
Have you seen Web 2.0?
That's what I'm saying. It's like saying, well, right. Yeah. You're right. They're not the same. But it's kind of inconsequential.
I miss the era of GeoCities. I think we should go back to that, well, guys.
But you know what I mean?
Have you seen the Shaq redesign? Sorry, I couldn't resist.
It's kind of just a plus one to what a single player game. It's not saying games are gone.
No, it's not saying single player games are gone.
It's saying that the idea of like burnout having or Need for Speed having these constantly telling you how your friends did in the single player game.
Right.
So you can compete.
Oh, I think it's going to be more than that. I think it's going to be more than that. I think that what's interesting to think about here is How much influence will it have when you have people playing in your game? And do people, will people really embrace that? I think that one thing that could happen is you could see a big push that direction, and then people sort of have a reactionary response to, you know, actually, I don't always want people jumping in my game, and I don't want people intruding on it. It's like, you know what? One of the reasons that I think people like, for instance, let's say reading a book, is that you read your book and it's you. You know, you're reading your book and it's your experience. And then afterwards, maybe you talk about it. Maybe you talk about, hey, I liked this character. I didn't like this character. What do you think about what happened here? But you have your...
Yeah, one of my least favorite things about my Kindle is the stupid feature of showing me what a lot of people have highlighted in their book. I have that turned off. It is...
Completely
annoying and does not add anything to my experience.
Well, 5 years, in 5 years in the future, all books are going to be multiplayer. So it's going to be
sweet.
Totally different situation.
So that having been said, I think that the point that he brings up about in a Facebook world, it's, you know, silly to think that you're not going to have this is spot on. I mean, look.
Well, the trend is more connected.
Do we do? Yeah, basically, do we do much of anything anymore that's not having some sort of? I mean, look, the internet has become an interesting new social part of our lives. I mean, originally it was some sort of information. It was a series of tubes, evidently.
Yeah,
it's not a dump truck. It's a series of tubes.
Right.
However, it became a series of tubes bringing us information, and now it's kind of evolved beyond that to Here's information that you like, Jeff, and you can go out and get that information. But at the same time, you're going to share a bunch of your information with other people that are your friends, that you're interested in. And now it's sort of created a network between all of us, the social network or whatever you want to call it, where we're sharing all those information about what we're doing, what we're interested in, likes, dislikes, all that kind of stuff, commonalities. And of course, that's going to extend into our entertainment media. It's not going to be game exclusive. We see it already. You know, one of the things I still fool around with, I don't use it all the time. I played around with Foursquare for a little while, but didn't get... I don't know. I got bored with it and put it aside.
Mm-hmm.
I still fool around some with this other competing product called Get Glue.
Mm-hmm.
And Get Glue is basically Foursquare for entertainment media. So if you're like watching a TV show, you check in with it. That's all cool. And it's interesting, like baby steps. There's gotta be a lot more coming. I'm really interested to see what's going to happen with single player gaming. I don't know that it's all going to be though intrusionary. I don't know it's all going to be, like Demon Souls, where people pop in and hinder or hate or aid you or get involved in you. Because there is still a layer of, hey, I just want to be playing my game, man. I don't want to be dependent on an internet. There's another thing is the 3-year timeline, again, presumes that we're all going to have fantastic, amazing internet connections in 3 years. And I'm not sure that's the case, especially not the United States.
I was going to say maybe in the United States, but there are countries who have huge bandwidth caps and much lower speeds. It's a weird thing to
generalize
for an industry that's worldwide.
Dude, you say that here in LA, but in the middle of America where, you know, oftentimes smaller communities, very, very spread out landscape, you know, it's very difficult to maintain a high-speed connection or even get high-speed connectivity.
Yeah.
And I don't mean like putting a huge satellite dish in your backyard or whatever. I mean, that's not the answer. So it's interesting. I think he's onto something. I think he's right that we'll all be very internet connected. I think
trend is to be more connected. And I think that will permeate.
And there'll be lots of sharing. I mean, that's very funny because I just had my iPad out here a minute ago. I mean, look at how much of a phenomenon sorcery was.
Yeah.
And by virtue of
the tweet integration,
which was like the first time that it had been more than just like an annoyance. Although I have to say that at points when a lot of my friends were playing, it became a little annoying.
I think the interesting thing that you brought up is there going to be a backlash to any of this? Are we going to get to the point where it's so saturated? And it may even be a generational backlash as this generation that's growing up right now that doesn't know anything without Twitter and Facebook and is growing. Are their kids going to be like, screw you, that's for old people?
We love to explore that.
Or is it going to be like television where it just is?
We'd love to explore that question in science fiction.
Yeah.
We love to explore that question of, you know, the ever-going push for technology.
Oh, sure.
When human revolution, Deus Ex, is all about the,
exactly.
It's all about that. Like, do we keep pushing the technology? Do we keep doing all these kind of things? Or should we humanize them?
When Apple's next device is just injected into my face and I can just have my 8 million songs. when people talk about their, it's on my internal radio and it literally is an internal radio.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if there's a
song stuck in my head.
I wonder if there's
because it's stuck in my head.
An augmentation in Deus Ex where it's just like you inject Twitter into your mind and you can see your feed while you're playing the game. That would be
The funny thing is, there's oftentimes there is just oomph in my head.
There you go. There's your internal radio. Sony surprised everyone. In this world of social media where stuff leaks pretty early, no one saw this coming. The PlayStation 3 hardware was reduced in price at Gamescom. Now, effective immediately, the 160-gigabyte system will drop to $249, a savings of $50.
And yes, North Americans, there is a new 160-gig SKU, which is, we covered it earlier.
We have talked about that on the show.
It doesn't do composite HD, though.
No. For Blu-ray.
For Blu-ray,
the
right.
Games do.
Right.
The Blu-ray doesn't.
Because we've got to have our DRM in there.
Right. Well, is it because I thought it was
copy protection? HDMI.
It's HDMI. Is it copy protection?
I thought for some sort of audio encoder. Anyway, 320 gigabyte system is now $299, and there's also going to be an Infamous 2 bundle at participating retailers that comes with Infamous 2, 320 gigabyte system, and a copy of Infamous 2, and 30 days of PlayStation Plus for $299. That's a pretty.
So
you're
wait,
basically getting the game for free.
What comes with the Infamous 2 bundle?
Infamous 2, PlayStation Plus. The system at 320 gigabytes?
I was totally kidding here.
Okay. I don't know. You looked like... I thought I could hear music coming out of your head at this point. So that's surprising. And also, another weird thing was Nintendo of Europe announced the Wii redesign, quote-unquote, which I saw an animated GIF that I sent to everyone in the office, which is a standing-up Wii that someone pushes over and it falls and it says redesign, which loses backwards compatibility with GameCube. It takes out the GameCube ports and the memory stick ports and the controller ports, and it's only going to be sold in Europe.
Well, how about the no Wi-Fi PSP?
And the no Wi-Fi
what
PSP
the hell
for
is that?
$99? Strange. I like that no Wi-Fi PSP. It's like, you know that PlayStation store that we keep pushing on you? And we sell a lot of PSP games.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to access that. You know, it's such a strange thing.
Sony and their game delivery is so weird because, you know, there's also been this ongoing thing of like, will every game for the Vita be or not be available through digital delivery? Will you be reliant on getting these flash cards or will you be able to get everything digitally? And I think there was a story this past week actually out of Gamescom that asserted that every game would be available through digital delivery. But then that's been a back and forth thing because I've heard just the opposite.
I don't know. I think that first party games, sure. Third party games, I don't think they're going to be able to make that decision themselves. Sony, especially.
Well, and I think, you'll have that same argument from a publisher of, look, everybody doesn't have, there's not ubiquitous access to online space. I want to be able to sell my game to anybody who might be able to interested to buy a Vita. So you got to be able to sell them a physical game thing.
Yeah, and the
physical game thing.
My kid wants a physical game thing. Do you carry those?
Oh man, I got that question so much when I worked at GameStop. But the thing also that's Microsoft, when they did the games on demand stuff, the reason why you don't see stuff landing on that service the day of is because they have retail partners that they also have to worry about.
How big do you think the drop to 250 for PS3 is going to be?
I think that's pretty significant. It's weird that they're putting out the Vita and lowering the price of the PS3. You know, it's like to the same. It's weird. But I think that could be a big deal. I don't know. I don't know how many people are like, finally, I can afford a PS3, but maybe.
You know, the pricing structure and time and a timing of price cuts is a very dark, you know, consumer, dark retailer art, right?
Yeah.
Because they're looking at like how many people have adopted it and where in the curve are we and when do we drop to like the next tier and what do we think the next tier is going to be that get people to adopt it?
Right.
I'm not even going to try and get inside their head. To me, it's great that they dropped the price. To me, 300 to 250 doesn't seem like that huge a deal. You know, like 300 to 200, but that's a huge drop. I mean, I don't know how, if you're Sony, how do you go in and sell, hey, we're going to drop the thing from, we're going to drop it from $300 to $200.
How much is a Blu-ray player nowadays? Can you get them for $99?
You actually, you know what? Actually, I was just reading a tweet from Molly Wood the other day. There was like a nice one for $50 someplace.
Yeah, well.
I was like, wow.
Yeah, we're beyond the point where it is the reason to own the PlayStation 3. I think that now that is the bonus feature, you know what I mean? Whereas before it was like, hey, you can get this Blu-ray player that plays games.
But it is nice that it has it in there.
It is. I mean, it's a significant difference between the PlayStation 2 and its DVD player and the Blu-ray thing. I think at this point it sort of doesn't really matter because you can get a Blu-ray player for super cheap.
I think that, yeah, I mean, $250 is good. It gives them a good marketing tool to go into holiday with. We lower the price. We've got great models. We've got this great bundle. I think it gives them It gives them a lot of good messaging to get out there in retail. If it helps them sell systems and gets more people playing games, that's a good thing.
I would.
You good with that? I'm happy with that.
I would venture to guess that with this price drop and the software, exclusive software they have coming up this holiday season, they're going to do very well.
Yeah. Uncharted. Yeah. I mean, I'm really curious. You know, I'm really curious to see how Resistance did. I played a little more of the beta this week.
Yeah.
And man, like the technical has gotten better, but it's still not perfect. But holy cow, that game needs some multiplayer balancing. And it's just such a competitive multiplayer. Like even now, even if you're just talking about PS3 exclusives, man, Uncharted multiplayer, and you guys are gonna laugh, and people are gonna be like all over me because I was like, does Uncharted 3 need multiplayer? Right now, Uncharted 3's multiplayer is better than what I'm playing in Resistance 3 beta.
You think if Resistance 3 comes out and underwhelms, it'll be the end of that franchise?
Yeah. Although we do have the Resistance Vita title announced. You know, Nihilistic is working on that, and it's an interesting universe. Yeah. You know, they like there's some good stuff there. Yeah, I kind of think it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you seen the beginning of Resistance 3? Where like actually,
I'm hoping Resistance 3 completely wins me over. That's what I'm hoping.
So Resistance 3, the opening cinematic to it, finally, really, if you haven't followed this, and maybe it's been out there before, but it finally lays out like exactly what the Chimeran threat. How it originated, what happened, and lays out like the timeline. It's like, oh, this is what. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it makes a little more sense, and that's kind of cool. And maybe the single player will be really great. I like the Insoms.
I do too.
We'll have to wait and see. There was a report not too long ago about the Vita having its RAM cut in half, and
got one horn knocked off.
Pretty much. I mean, one thing that. Developers have been saying for a long time is that the Vita has a lot of power behind it, which is showing off some very impressive software. Uncharted looks great.
Yeah.
And other software that's
LBP.
Coming out. But now it's actually, Sony has said that the Vita, when added all of its RAM together, has more RAM than the PS3.
RAM prices have come down.
And it's RAM.
512 megabytes of main RAM and 128 megabytes of VRAM. In the Vita versus 256 on XDR RAM and GPU.
And I see people's eyes glazing over right now and going, oh.
The point being, and that Sony was talking about this, is that you cannot show off software that has a piece of hardware that is powered by a certain amount of RAM, decide halfway through it to change that. It will fundamentally change the way that those games
Oh, I see. So what they're
look.
Saying is we didn't change that. There's,
it never changed.
Yeah, it never changed. Okay.
Basically squashing the rumor. I think that, you know, remember that old story of, I think it was Epic, went to Microsoft and said, this is what Gears of War would look like if you had this much RAM, and this is how much it would look like if you had 512 megabytes of RAM. Huge fundamental difference. Do you guys remember this story that happened?
No,
but it's funny.
It is funny.
Well, I mean, that ended up working out for them. This is something that I think Mike Capps talks about on a regular basis. If you get Mike Capps drunk, he
You'd
will
have
talk
to eat
about
this many bowls of your favorite fiber cereal
situation. We talked about MMOs and multiplayer. Warhammer Wrath of Heroes was announced by BioWare. It is going to be a MMO free to play that focuses on 3-team PvP combat, each team with 6 players. Gonna go out in beta soon. Have you played? There's so many Warhammer MMOs. There's the Warhammer, and then there's Warhammer 40K. That 40K MMO is not coming out until like 2013 from THQ.
Yeah, but it looks so badass already.
Right. I mean, but that game is not. It keeps getting pushed out. Yeah. It's coming out a long way. Does this interest you? We were just talking about games that focus on MMO grouping. This is a game that does do that. Free to play Warhammer, and it's
6 player. What?
3 teams PvP. Huh. Each team has 6 players. Really?
I mean, it doesn't sound. It sounds. It's.
I'd say that was a
what?
Thud.
A thud. Well, a thud? I mean, I have no information other than that sentence you told me. I'm not a huge PvP guy, so.
But are you into the Warhammer?
Yeah,
universe?
Dude. Warhammer's awesome.
Yeah.
Warhammer is awesome, especially 40K.
Oh, see, yeah. This is not that.
Yeah. I mean, 40K is the sci-fi stuff. It's super cool. But I like the Orcs versus Humans. It's a cool universe, man. I mean, it's basically everything that Blizzard made.
All right. You don't care. Let's go to Dota 2. It was at Gamescom for the first time. It was shown off. You can actually go back and watch all of the Dota 2 matches. Did you end up seeing any of the Dota stuff?
No.
So Dota, obviously, is the spiritual successor to Defense of the
Ancients.
Didn't
Dodos go extinct?
fuck off. The game is expected to launch by the beginning of next year. Valve says that they are going to be releasing a beta soon for the game. If you want, you should go online and check out the game. One thing that's interesting about this is they have not decided how they're going to deliver the game. If it's going to be something that you purchase or if it's going to be using the free-to-play model like Team Fortress 2 has. Hmm. So we're still waiting.
What do you think about the argument that's gone on in several chatty threads about frustration with Steam taking basically a community mod and monetizing it, taking the name and turning it into this big commercial product that they claim to own?
Counter-Strike?
Well, yeah.
Well, that's what I'm asking. What do you think about that argument?
I don't know. Well, first of all, there's no argument to be made yet because they haven't talked about how the game is going to be monetized.
That's
if it's going to be free to play.
Point.
They haven't even decided. They said, because one of the great quotes of this is Gabe Newell was talking about that they do not know what they're going to do in terms of pricing. They don't have any plans yet. He said, the problem isn't to figure out what your monetization strategy is. If you have something with a super careful strategy and it sucks, it doesn't matter. So they're focusing on making a good game, and then they're going to figure out whether or not they're going
to
sell it.
You know what Gabe needs to focus on? Because I read another quote from him. He needs to focus, like, I'm going to laugh because it was funny, but he needs to focus on getting freaking Half-Life Episode 3 finished. Like those.
What's this?
Like those picketers. And not playing 800 fucking hours of Dota 2. Did you read that quote?
No.
He's like, I think I played 800 hours of Dota 2. I'm like, dude, back away from the freaking Dota 2 and go work on the damn game.
To be fair, I don't know that Gabe Newell is programming Half-Life.
I don't care. Go stand over there and make people work on it. I want my damn game.
I love that the fact that the day after those guys that were protesting on Valve's front lawn, the day after that, they announced a new Counter-Strike game.
That was pretty
giant
funny.
Fuck off.
Which we're gonna see. We're gonna see that at PAX as well.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, you know who's a big, big, big Dota 2 and big Dota player? I did not know this. Luke Smith.
Oh yeah, really?
And he's gonna be there at PAX. So if you want to ask him about Dota, as a matter of fact, I was actually asking him about that, and we got into this conversation that I knew I was out of my depth when he was explaining to me that League of Legends is like not that great because it doesn't, you know, you can't do denials in it. I was like, you're right, it is not in denial. And then he explained to me what denials were, and I was like, wow, that's a really cool concept. And I just realized I have no idea how to play these games.
Sounds like Luke is in denial.
No, he's down. He's down. So he's really excited about Dota 2.
Hey, are you excited about NFL Sunday Ticket coming on PlayStation 3?
I am very excited about
this.
Do you
have DirecTV?
Long story short, I don't at the moment have Sunday Ticket.
Are you willing to pay $339 to access it on your PlayStation 3?
It's an interesting question.
No.
Have you ever bought Sunday Ticket before?
I never have. I like having friends there.
That's what Sunday Ticket costs.
I know.
So there's been a huge complaint about this.
They need to have a la carte. I need to be able to buy just the games for my team. I don't need all the games. Let me just buy it a la carte. Let me buy one game that weekend because I happen to be home and I want to watch it.
What do you think the price would have been for that?
I don't know. $10. I'll pay $10.
Okay, that's $160.
That's $160 for what?
16-week season.
Yeah.
That's $160
for one team.
Yep.
I mean, let me do something less expensive than 300 and whatever the hell.
Well, to be fair, if you have DirecTV, it's only $335 instead of $340.
Well, no, it's if you have a season ticket subscription already from DirecTV, it's $50 to get the service on your PlayStation. Now, why you'd want the PlayStation? Hell, I don't know. Maybe you take your PlayStation over to a friend's house and log in there and you can watch it there, or you take it with you on the road or something like that. If you have it already on DirecTV, you probably don't care that much about having on your PS3, so it's not that big a deal. There's also been some concerns that, you know, with NHL Center Ice and the MLB At Bat, those services have both been, shall we say, technically challenged on the PS3.
Yeah, the NHL one has had some problems.
And the MLB one has had some problems. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, this being a partnership with DirecTV, I'm sure DirecTV will put a ton of technical muscle behind it because they don't want it to reflect poorly on them. And the license is expensive. Obviously, the license has always been expensive. But the key thing is here that instead of buying, you know, even what's the cheapest DirecTV? Probably $50 a month. Instead of having to have a DirecTV subscription and then buy a Sunday Ticket on top of that, I can be, you know, say you're in an apartment where you can't get a DirecTV because you're, you know, you can't put a dish up or whatever.
I'm in that.
Well, so now you can have full HD with Red Zone, Sunday Ticket, get all the games. And, you know, like for me, the way I've thought about it, because I've had Sunday Ticket, you know, up until a year or two ago, I've had it for years and years and years, was this was a pretty easy look at because I could actually go back and map it. Going to a sports bar for Sunday was going to cost me way more
than a season of DirecTV.
Right.
Like, I could drop $100 a Sunday easy in the sports bar by the time, you know, like, especially here on the West Coast, because you go at like 9:30 in the morning and then you have like coffee and breakfast.
Right.
And then the next thing
And I mean, you're buying products from a place. You're not.
But that's the whole reason they have that subscription. I mean, that's the whole reason. I mean, what do you think the bar pays for that subscription? It's ridiculous.
I mean, the difference is I either watch whatever the national networks decide is the most important game for me that week.
Well, or your regional affiliate, because they can pick up whatever they want to off the satellite. And then sometimes
It's horrible. It's horrible since we have no team here and they just decide.
They randomly pick.
It's stupid.
And you'll be looking at the map and on like Wednesday it'll say one thing and then like Friday they'll decide, eh, you know what, actually we're going to show this
game. Exactly. And even your online guide will have the wrong game.
Yep.
because they decided
to change it based off whatever they decided would be the best preferences.
And sometimes they won't even show a second freaking game they won't even show a late game. They'll show reruns of Maury Povich instead and I want to shoot my television.
Listen.
Wow.
Don't get mad at Maury Povich. He has nothing to do with
this. Dude, this is not a Diablo 3 auction house. Relax. Ease up.
How much is the MLB package?
You know what? I don't know. So I guess like the thing is, if you're upset about the monetary expense here, be mad at the overall monetary expense of Sunday Ticket, because it's always been super expensive.
Yeah.
That's what I'm mad at. I'm mad that they give you no options.
The access is cool. The fact that you can finally, without a subscription, DirecTV through your PS3 access Sunday Ticket is a big deal.
All right. I'll get off.
It's well-rounded on the PlayStation 3 because now they have all three major sports.
I think it's a coup. I think it's a huge coup that Sony was able to go into DirecTV and do a partnership deal to get this thing done. Because that's always been, I mean, think about how big a deal Sunday Ticket has been DirecTV. They've paid so much money to keep that license because they know they get a substantial number of subscribers by having that in their pocket.
Because it's the only place
you can
get it.
They did it the right way. Sony did it the right way by going to the actual sports.
Yep.
And signing deals with them rather than, you know, Microsoft going to ESPN to get ESPN 3, which is like, you know, the reject league.
The Trace.
You really want to watch bowling on your Xbox 360? I don't know what's on ESPN 3. I don't have a TV. Quickly before we end, Battlefield 3 has won the Best of Gamescom Awards.
Shock.
After
that trailer, really? Have you seen the... Have you seen... If you have not seen, by the way, right now, if you have
really
not seen
good.
The Battlefield 3 trailer, be absolutely certain that you watch it in the next hour or so, because it is...
because it will disappear in the next hour or so.
No, because I'm just saying, like, I don't want... Like, you should listen to the end of the show, which is, like, 5 minutes away. But then, you know, if you need to take a little break and hit the restroom or something, that's fine, too. But then, after that...
And then, you probably want a snack. You'll probably be hungry. But
yeah,
you should probably take a nap. But after you take a nap...
You need something to drink with your snack.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do this. Finish up the show.
Okay.
Go to the bathroom.
I'm writing this down.
Get a snack.
Keep telling me.
Grab a beer.
All right.
And get comfortable. Make sure you've got a good screen and some sound, and then watch the Battlefield 3
trailer.
Call
your mom. Don't forget to call your mom.
Don't do that first. Watch the Battlefield 3 trailer.
This bit has been great to watch, let's continue on it. Best online game was Star Wars The Old Republic. Best console game, of course, FIFA 12. It's Germany. Best browser game was The Sims Social, which I've been hearing a lot of cool buzz on. Have you guys, The Sims Social? You look at me like I'm crazy, but didn't we talk about this at some point last week?
Possibly.
The Sims Social?
I zone out a lot.
Because you guys love Facebook games, right? All right, fuck off. PlayStation Vita.
Because The Sims Online was such a huge
PlayStation Vita. Yeah, exactly. PlayStation
For
Vita
pedophiles.
Was best hardware.
Where's the pig?
Is that why that was your game of the year?
Where's the pig? You both got pigged.
Oh, shit.
Pigged.
Best mobile game was Uncharted, Golden Abyss. Diablo 3 was best PC game. And the Sesame Street game coming from Double Fine was best children's game.
You know, instead of Golden Abyss, they could have called that Golden Shower. It would have been much more.
Really?
You know what? I think you owe me money because you've said that joke 9 times. I think now you just need to pay me every time you repeat a joke. There is a second pig now. That's it for news. There is a
pigs
second
are
pig.
Multiplying.
Pigs are
You know why?
God.
Because it's time for us to end the show here. So as we always do, it's time for Finishing Moves.
Yeah.
It's the weekend, and it's time for Finishing Moves.
Hey-o. I guess I'll start, because usually I wrap up and Zav's going to finish. So I'll start off. I was really excited to, reasons that I think I clicked with Cerny's comments is something I've been thinking about quite a lot over the past couple of years. You guys know I've been playing social games experimentally to try and get a handle on that, is that I feel very strongly that our
our ability to incorporate what's cool about social networks and what we love about gaming's and online sphere sort of started to happen and then just froze and stopped. And we have not had any progress in it. And we always seem to be doing the same sort of thing, which is let's make the game do a post on a wall someplace. And even it's gotten to the point, and hey, I'm all for what Need for Speed did with Speedwall and all that kind of stuff, but it's still the same thing. It's like, we are creating a wall post and it shows that Mr. Kanata has done this. Like, guys, we got to like start thinking like a little like let's start thinking about how we incorporate social aspects into our game design. There's a lot of cool and exciting stuff that we could do that, you know, that we've only even dreamt about, but we stopped dreaming about because we got so caught up in like what these mechanisms are that work. And I'm excited to think that like someone like Mark Cerny sees the, like that next evolution out there. And that we could start maybe like moving forward again, since it feels like a couple of years ago we got to, hey, let's have the game tweet and post on our Facebook and stop developing. And there's so much more that we could do that I think will be exciting and interesting. And that's not it.
Cool. My finisher is going to be a quick hit, a little recommendation of a free iOS game that I downloaded and have had the disproportionate amount of fun with.
Which is?
It's called X Baseball, I think, Extra Large X Baseball. And it's this, I have to show it to you. Unfortunately, my iPhone's in the other room being played with right now by my girlfriend.
She totally absconded. By the way, last week she absconded with your iPhone, and we like leave here, and you're like, my battery's dead.
She's totally gotten addicted to Mega Mall Story, which is the game dev story, guys. Anyway, this game is X Baseball, and it's this like 8-bit, baseball. You're a pitcher on a mound, and you're a batter.
Okay.
And he throws pitches at you. Just keeps throwing pitches at you of different varying speeds and arcs.
And is your purpose to hit the pitch?
Yeah. Just tap the screen anywhere and you swing.
I think I understand how baseball.
Three strikes.
Works.
Game's over.
What?
You can just keep hitting and. Then there are wacky things start to happen, like birds flying overhead, and sometimes you can hit the birds with your baseball. Then there's like a guy in a jetpack, and you can hit him with your baseball. And it's just a score thing. Okay. It is the most simplistic, it's free, simplistic game ever, but I can't stop playing it.
Really?
It's one of those high scores, like how long can you manage the streak? And it's really just tapping the damn screen. But
sounds cool.
Pretty fun.
X Large X Baseball by Poppy.
There you go.
There you go, right there. So it's pretty simple. It is cute. It's definitely, it's really as simple as
that's the entire game right
there. As Jeff describes it. It's a side view of a pitcher and a batter.
Turn them shits around, let me see.
Side view of a pitcher and a batter.
Ooh.
Very 8-bit kind of style.
That's cool.
So there you go. It's called X Large X Dash Baseball by Poppy, and it is available on the iTunes Store for free.
Cool. My finishing move is to remind people that Weekend Confirmed is going to be at PAX Saturday at 8:30. Don't go by. It's funny. If you go to the PAX schedule. Saturday at 8. If you go by the PAX schedule, it says that it's hosted by Garrett Lee.
Really?
And John Davidson.
Oh, boy.
Jesus.
It is.
The
yeah,
funny thing is I sent them copy, but they didn't, for some reason, use it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They also think Mattis is going to be there. Unfortunately, he's not going to be, but it's kind of a funny situation.
Taylor Rad Show's on Friday, though, too.
I was going to ask you to tell us when Taylor Rad Show is. And Friday. Also, because Garnet gave me an idea for a finishing moves, he just told me to just repeat the word hockey. So hockey. It starts soon. I'm super excited. Go Leafs, go.
We should maybe we'll play a little multiplayer hockey. You can try and teach me the ways of the stick.
Yeah, just take your goalie out. I'll never score. Jesus.
That's what she said.
Mm. Pig.
All right, folks, do swing by the Gamefly Facebook page so you can sign up for that contest we told you about. $250, a couple of tickets to the Call of Duty XP experience, which is Labor Day weekend coming up September 2nd and 3rd. We will be at PAX, as Mr. D'Amato's just regaled you with. Mr. Kanata is available. I'm being very official now.
Thank you.
Mr. Gunner is every day on Totally Rad Show. Just had one of their funniest episodes ever.
Yeah, we got a lot of feedback on the old molecular gastronomy episode.
Excellent, excellent work.
And we're going to have a conversation as to what that
means. Look it up.
And then, of course, check out the show notes for everything on Mr. Perkins and the awesome song Pop Life, which we had in the feature music break. I'm working on, by the way, people always ask me about that. I'm working on some game music from a couple of soundtracks.
Sweet.
Coming up for future music breaks. So keeping my fingers crossed, we'll have some awesome stuff coming up there. Do come by shagnews.com. Hop into the comments thread for the show.
the show. I don't know what game I'm thinking of. Anyway, come in and tell us what you thought. He's giving you assignments to comment on. And that's it. That's it. That's Weekend Confirmed. And until next week, we are Ghost. The same line too. You get my voice heard over these airwaves. All I gotta do is get me some airplay. Show you that I love you, show you that I care, show you that I listen, show you that I'm here. I showed you all of that, I showed you everything. I gave my all to y'all, following those are 3 rings. You know more about me anyone will ever know. In my love for you, I'll never let it go. Everything I ever wanted, everything I ever needed, but I'm still struggling, still competing for your love, your heart. And you, always be together, never be apart. Even from the early start, I'll do anything for you. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.